from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
For a lot of people in the media, he broke them, you know. He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly, and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Scott Jennings, senior political commentator at CNN, and also author of the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. We'll talk in depth with Scott about that book on today's program. Also later on, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. First, we're joined by Scott Jennings. He's CNN senior political commentator, also radio host for the Salem Radio Network. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the time today. Honored to be with you.
I don't know if you get this as much as maybe you did a year ago, but I still hear people say this, which is, where the heck did Scott Jennings come from? All of a sudden, election 2024, everyone's watching viral videos on X and elsewhere, and this guy Scott Jennings is making points we all wish we could make when leftists make their arguments. So tell people a bit about your background. Where did Scott Jennings come from?
Well, a long time ago, he came from Kentucky. I'm a Western Kentuckian, grew up in a little town called Dawson Springs, and also attended the University of Louisville. That's where I graduated from. And, you know, years ago, I thought I was going to be in journalism. I was a radio news anchor in Louisville while I was in college. But in 2000, I decided to join the Bush for President campaign, and that began my journey in politics. But, you know, I never really forgot about my love of the media, my love of broadcasting. And in 2017, I got a chance to join CNN. You know, for a few years, it was really a very much a part-time job for me. But the 2024 campaign, plus the advent of this 10 o'clock debating show, which we now have for the last couple of years, really gave me a chance to do what I can do. And so I really credit CNN, honestly. They decided they wanted to put a conservative on the air who was going to fight hard for how half the country sees the world. And I'm doing that every day and making arguments and debating the left and doing it often 4 and 5 on 1. And honestly, I think it's working.
People like you, I think, because you are measured and leveled and logical, even in the face of perhaps some hyperactive activity from the left on the panel. What is going through your mind as you await your turn, let your colleague finish before you rebut that argument? What are you thinking about?
Well, look, I think the TV debates are for conservatives. I think the way we win is by keeping our wits about us and also arguing in good faith and in good humor. I don't think we win by just simply yelling louder than the other people. I don't really care for crosstalk. I don't like it when the whole thing just gets tied up in a shouting match. I believe in conservative arguments. So I believe in letting these conversations unfold. And when you do that, then you get a chance to talk. And if you give me 60 seconds, there's a really good chance I'm going to explain why the left is wrong, why the conservatives have it right, and why our point of view right now seems to be ascendant in America. But I think a lot of people get into these debates, they get overly emotional, they can't control themselves, and they stop making factual or logical arguments, and they just start operating out of emotion or anecdote. And I just don't personally find that to be persuasive. And I think most people who watch debates and enjoy debates would rather hear someone argue from a position of fact and logic and reason as opposed to just constant emotional overreaction.
Scott Jennings, the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. And Scott, as I read A Revolution of Common Sense, it occurred to me that this is a book as much about the president's cabinet as it is about the president himself. Scott Bessent, Marco Rubio, Doug Burgum, Christopher Wright, Elon Musk for a time as well in that inner circle. How do you explain that a guy who is painted as a dictator and an autocrat put so much trust in these advisors and cabinet members who are so sharp on the issues?
Well, that's a great question. And the one big observation that I was able to make, I think, after hanging around the White House and spending some time with the president and just talking to all these people, is just what a premium Trump put on picking the right team this time around. I think that's one of the biggest differences between this administration and his first. He's got the correct team that matches his leadership style. So you look at the people that he's chosen, Bessent, Rubio, Burgum, and the others that you mentioned. They best match how he wants to run the country. I think in the first term, he didn't quite have that. Not that those people were bad people. It's just when you have a leader, when you have a manager, the team has to match the style. And this time around, they got that right. I can tell you this. I don't know who was running the country, really, during the Biden years. I'm not sure any of us do. But I know who's running it right now. It's Donald Trump. And the way he's running it is out of the Oval Office, behind the Resolute desk, and surrounded by a cabinet and a team of advisors who are not there to execute their will. They're there to execute the president's will based on the results of the last election. So I really do think he puts a lot of trust in these guys. And he'll tell you, you know, Rubio's been an all-star. Bessent's been an all-star. Mm-hmm. And all these people he has put in place, what are they doing? They're taking his priorities that he clearly laid out to the American people, and they're executing them in their own divisions. And I, you know, my personal view is that Bessent and Rubio have been the all-stars of the cabinet. And you hear that constantly from conservatives that you talk to around and around the country. They're just so impressed with these two guys. And you look at their portfolios, and, you know, a great chunk of the president's first year in office has fallen right in the lap of Rubio and Bessent, and they have executed flawlessly.
On Marco Rubio, the president has had some relationships with, say, older guard Republicans that have fizzled after a time. Rubio's a guy that sort of predates the president in terms of his political stature, but someone who seems to have grown in stature with the president and grown in trust with the president. Why is Rubio so strong inside the administration?
Well, he has been, I think, both a skillful operator inside the building over at the State Department, but also externally. I mean, you look at all the serious issues that have come up on the world stage in the last year. I mean, the president has spent a lot of time on foreign policy. Rubio's been in the middle of all of it. You look at the peace agreements they've negotiated. You look at dealing with the migration crisis going on in our hemisphere. I mean, across the board, usually on a weekly basis, Trump is doing something that involves the portfolio of the State Department. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, Rubio's all over that as well. And so one of the reasons he's been able to grow in stature is just because the president has put so much on his plate, and the president himself has focused so much on these issues. It demanded a Secretary of State who could rise to the occasion. There's no doubt that Rubio has done that. And I think what conservatives love about Rubio is just how articulate he is at explaining, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's why it's going to work. He is one of the smoothest communicators in the cabinet. And as you know, with Trump, being able to communicate externally is a big part of what it means to work for him. And I just don't think anybody has communicated the America First worldview better than Marco Rubio. He has shown extreme skill set here, both in terms of internal management, but external communications. He's really the whole package right now and is doing a terrific job, in my opinion.
Scott Jennings with us, CNN senior political commentator. You hear him hosting on Salem Radio Network as well. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. You mentioned this first year or so has been a heavy foreign policy year for President Trump. Inside A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point that it's actually surprising how not friendly the president has been to Russia since taking office. That, of course, goes against some conventional wisdom that says, oh, Trump's a Russian stooge. How has the president been perhaps an enemy to Russia during his time in the Oval Office?
Well, I think this is one of the most sinister narratives, and it's left over from the beginning of his first administration when every Democrat in the country convinced themselves that Russia had stolen the election, which, of course, we now know is completely, totally false and fabricated. But as a leftover of that era, they are now convinced that every foreign policy move the president makes is done so in service to Vladimir Putin. The record is exactly the opposite. Yes, it is absolutely true that he's trying to achieve a peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. I tell you one thing I learned about Donald Trump. The man is serious about peace. He hates war. He doesn't like war. He doesn't like the idea of people dying all over the world. And he believes if you have a strong American president, you could bring about peace in the world. And he has done that in several conflicts. But on the Russia piece, look what he's done with NATO, getting them to agree to go to 5% for their defense spending levels. That's never been done before. He has provided assistance and weapons to Ukraine. You know, he's had Zelensky in the Oval Office, and although they've had difficult conversations, there's really no question, where the president aligned with our allies in Europe, aligned with NATO, there's no question where he is on this. And he has time and again, I think, grown more and more frustrated with Vladimir Putin, who is rebuffing his efforts to try to get to a peace agreement. I think the president knows what the score here is. He's dealing with a Russian president who only understands toughness. He only understands strength. And I think that's what the president is doing when he's helping our allies understand the wisdom of investing more in their own national defense. He has strengthened NATO far beyond what any president's been able to do when everybody was predicting the opposite, that he was going to destroy NATO. I just think time and again, these attacks have been hurled at Trump on the Russia stuff, and he constantly proves that it's not true, yet this narrative persists. You sort of have this unholy alliance on this between Democrats and the media. They just sort of take it as an article of faith, and they can go out and make these flippant comments. Oh, the president, you know, he likes Vladimir Putin. You have no evidence of that whatsoever, but you do have evidence to the contrary. It's just sad to me that they won't talk about it that way.
That's Scott Jennings of CNN and the Salem Radio Network. We'll talk more with him about his new book in just a moment. But first, I want to invite you to help shape the future of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, which includes this show you're listening to right now. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu. Click on the survey pop-up, and you can take our very first listener survey. By doing so, you'll help the Hillsdale College Podcast Network reach millions of Americans with the timeless truths that make this country great. But we need your help. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu. Click on the survey pop-up to take the survey. Thanks for listening, and thanks in advance for your feedback. We continue with Scott Jennings from CNN and the Salem Radio Network. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, you mentioned the media. There's a chapter in which you coined the phrase political information distribution complex in the way that information flows from the legacy media, mainstream media, to the American public. Is that changing a bit? We see some changes at the Washington Post, both on the op-ed page and among the paper's reporters. We see changes at CBS, Barry Weiss and Free Press people coming in to the CBS network. Are executives realizing at last that something needs to change?
Well, I think maybe yes. I think we have a long way to go, though. I think the American media is in such a deep hole with the people. You look at the confidence in institutions measurements taken by Gallup. I mean, people don't have confidence in the institution of the media. People want there to be a trusted free press. I certainly do. I work in it. You know, I believe that we need a trusted free press. We just don't have that right now, but we could get it. And I think things are changing, but I think we have a long way to go. And I think Trump, unfortunately, for a lot of people in the media, he broke them, you know. Mm-hmm. He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that. And I think in our political coverage, the reason I point that phrase, political information distribution complex, is because on election night 2024, you know, I made this long speech after we finally declared Trump the winner on CNN about the death of the political information distribution complex, mm-hmm. and about how it had misled the American people about the state of the election, about what was happening in the last 3 weeks of the election, about the issues going on in the election. It had worked so hard to elect Kamala Harris, and it had convinced people that she was surging at the end, when in fact we know the opposite was true. And so I think people have awakened to the idea that they're not always getting all the information from one source, and people right now are seeking out independent sources. They're looking at folks right now who are existing outside of the mainstream media space for information. That is the market screaming at you to make changes. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things you mentioned I think are good. There's a long way to go. I'm a huge Barry Weiss fan. I mean, she may save us all. We'll see. We'll see. But I think that's someone who understands, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to give people the truth. We're trying to tell people the truth. We're trying to get people information, not narratives. And I just think that's what people are hungry for. They don't want narratives. They want to know the facts. They want to know the information. But often what they get are narratives, just like on the Russia conversation. They've been fed a narrative about that, but I'm not sure they've been fed the truth about it. But they get plenty of narratives. But I think there's something amiss here, and they're hungry for truth instead of narrative.
Scott Jennings with us. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. The other big issue in President Trump's first year has been the southern border and immigration. And President Trump, back in that first campaign, of course, made the promise that we'd get tired of winning. And it was kind of a joke, of course. But I wonder, Scott, if the president has been too successful on the southern border, because that was a disaster and he cleaned it up very quickly. All it took was a change in the Oval Office. But now that has disappeared from the news cycle. It is not as big of a deal as it was perhaps 6, 8, 12 months ago. Texas is redistricting, thinking that some of those Hispanic gains along the border will hold. And I just wonder, if has the president been too successful on the southern border?
Well, he has. There's no question. I think this has been the swiftest and most important accomplishment of his administration. I think the immigration issue is what propelled him in the first place when he first ran for office. It certainly propelled a big part of his campaign last year. And you're exactly right. All we needed was a new president. We haven't passed any new laws. That's what's amazing about this. We've not passed a single immigration law. We're just enforcing the laws that exist. And that shows you the difference between this administration, which is simply enforcing the law, and the previous, which was instructing federal law enforcement not to enforce the law. They wanted a culture of open borders. And, of course, you know all the societal ills that flow from that. Trump shows up, changes the attitude. The border is closed. I do think we're having a pretty significant national debate about internal enforcement, but I still think President Trump is right side up on it. I still think the American people believe, you know, we let 20 million people into this country. We can't just turn a blind eye to what that means for our society. It doesn't mean that they're all bad people or that they're all violent criminals, but it does mean they all broke our laws. And it does beg the question, how permissive are we going to be? And the more permissive you are on amnesty for things like that, the more you encourage people to come here. I think Trump knows that. So part of the internal enforcement argument is not just, well, we have to get people out because they broke our laws. It's that we cannot go back to sending a signal to the rest of the world. Just get here and it'll probably work out for you. Mm-hmm. That attitude's what got us in the mess in the first place. And so I totally agree with you that he's been successful. But honestly, I'm not sure the job is done. The internal enforcement piece goes on. Democrats are fighting hard against it. And honestly, if we ever got a new administration or people in charge that had a different attitude, you could see how quickly you could slip back into the old ways. Now I think it's also evolving into this fight with the narco-terrorists. They're sinking the boats out in our hemisphere now. Mm-hmm. They're amassing military power to do that. I think the signal goes beyond just simple immigration enforcement. The message is, we're just not going to allow the United States to be taken advantage of by Central and South America anymore, whether that's via just simple immigration or whether that's via this narco-terrorist system that exists that puts all this poison into our country that kills hundreds of thousands of people a year.
Scott Jennings, there's a section in A Revolution of Common Sense on DEI, and you expound on this thought, this quote from Chris Caldwell, who says that this rolling back of DEI is the biggest policy change in decades. Why is the activity against DEI, the elimination of DEI, both governmental and then the influence on the private sector, perhaps an underreported, underappreciated part of President Trump's second term?
Well, one of the things that he has done is he has, you know, I think we had a wet blanket on us in the country. Everybody was sort of tiptoeing around, being forced to speak this language of DEI, being forced to say things out loud, candidly on other cultural issues, on the transgender ideology. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at how our culture had been overtaken by people who had just invented a new language and invented a bunch of nonsense and forcing everyone in government and in corporate America to live by these edicts. And of course, the Biden administration definitely, as a policy matter, installed this in the federal government. They pushed this. Nobody really liked it. Nobody really thinks it's a good idea to operate by the edicts of DEI or by the edicts of transgender ideology. And so Trump comes along and basically had the courage to say what everyone else is already thinking. He removes it from the federal government. It's no longer federal policy. What they want to do is find people who are best for the job, and that's the trait that they're looking for, who's the best qualified person. By doing that, I think he gave cover and courage to everybody in corporate America to say, well, yeah, we don't have to do this either. Mm-hmm. And I think the vast majority of Americans agree with the president on this. It is a major division between the two parties. The Democrats are captured by this identity politics, ideologies that are all wrapped around identity. And what he wants and what he would say is that that's just not common sense. You know, what's common sense is who's the right person for the job? Who's got the best qualifications? Shouldn't that be what we're looking for first and foremost? That is a common sense way to approach the job that most Americans agree with. And by ripping it out of the federal government, he basically created a permission structure for everybody else in America to do the same thing. And I think there is relief, absolute relief across corporate America that Trump had the courage to finally turn us away from this ideology, which, by the way, it's bad for culture. It's bad for America. It's bad for people. And it's not a good way to run a government, certainly not a good way to run a company or any kind of an organization. Trump knew it. He ran on it. And he followed through on the promise, and I think people are appreciative of it.
Scott Jennings, in A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point explicitly at least once, and I think it comes through in different ways, that Donald Trump, despite, again, media reports, is a very curious person and wants to know from people around him. You were inside a few of these meetings while researching and writing A Revolution of Common Sense. How does Donald Trump get his information? How does he want it presented to him? What questions does he want answered?
That is a great question, and it is a big observation and takeaway for me having written this book, observing the president in a meeting. I think the caricature of him portrayed by the media is totally inaccurate. He is extremely curious. He asks a lot of questions. He likes to watch debates between advisors, people who have slightly different opinions about things. He does ask for everyone's opinion in the room. I watched him do it in the Oval Office. I watched him do it on Air Force One when I went to Michigan with him on his 100th day in office. He convenes people. He listens. And then he makes decisions. He's decisive. I think a difference between him and Biden was famously indecisive or uninvolved. Trump is involved. He's involved in the details. He's involved in how decisions are made. But once a decision is made, it's made. He's a decisive person. That is a trait that I think makes for a good presidency. So my observations are he absolutely likes to get information from people. He takes in a lot of information. He is as in tune with the daily news and cultural zeitgeist as anyone. And so when you think about, you know, what does the president know? Who is he talking to? He talks to a wide range of people, but they're not all yes men, and they're not all telling him what he wants to hear. There are a lot of people, I think, around him who are constantly debating about what the right thing to do is. But at the end of the day, they all know who the decision maker is. And the president also knows, ultimately, it's my responsibility to make a decision. You can't debate things endlessly. At some point, you have to decide what direction we're going. And I think he's been good at both. Putting together these internal conversations, but then being decisive when the time came to make a decision.
Scott, we talked earlier that this has been a foreign policy focused presidency for much of this first year of the second term. And President Trump has a very different view about United States power than Joe Biden did. What does President Trump understand about U.S. leadership on the world stage and showing and using, when necessary, U.S. power on the world stage?
Great question. Well, first of all, he understands what it means to have a strong American president who's willing to engage and what it means to have a weak and indecisive president. That's what we had before. So he believes that if the American president is strong, he believes that if the American president projects confidence and strength and decisiveness, then, look, we are the world superpower. We are the indispensable country in the world. Our engagement with a president like that can force people to the table, can bring people around and get people to, you know, do things. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I don't think there's anybody except for Donald Trump who could have convened the Arab states, his special relationship with Netanyahu. I mean, the people that he had to get in the room, he gets in the room and he gets them to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden couldn't figure that out. He's done that in little areas all over the world. The one area that eludes him is Russia, Ukraine, and he is working earnestly towards it. It's probably the most complicated situation that he is dealing with, but I know he's focused on it and trying to get to an outcome every single day. But in most cases, I think his view is that if the American president projects strength, if we say we're not going to put up with nonsense here, we're not going to put up with bad actors, we're not going to put up with people, you know, agreeing to something and then violating it the next day. He says we're not going to put up with narco terrorists in our own hemisphere. You need to help us with that. Look at what's going on with Mexico. We've had a massive drop in fentanyl coming across the border. Yes, the border is closed because of Trump. Some of that, though, remember at the beginning of the administration, he slapped the tariffs on Mexico and said, this is how serious I am about needing you to work with me on getting fentanyl down. I don't want it coming across the border anymore. That has been a major success. They're not covering it, but it's been a major success. Mm-hmm. None of this happens if these other countries don't take the president seriously. And you have to take Trump seriously. He has shown, if you don't take me seriously, I will take action. And people respect that. And so it goes into this idea of, is the president strong or is he weak? Is the president decisive or is he constantly wringing his hands? Is he constantly indecisive? Right now we have a strong, decisive president, and it's yielding results.
Final question for Scott Jennings. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, is available now. A quote from the book: Trump has expanded the definition of Republicans so it includes people who never have thought of themselves as Republicans until Trump invited them in. First of all, I think a great point that the invitation is such an important part of this process. You have to go ask for the vote. But this has led to a coalition, a wide coalition. It's led to people like RFK and Lori Chavez de Remer in the cabinet and people who perhaps are not historically Republican-type selections. So the big question, how do you hold this coalition together when Trump is not going to appear on the ballot anymore? And how do you convince Republican voters to go out and vote when Donald Trump is not on the ballot?
Well, that's the number one strategic conversation that the Republican Party is wrestling with right now. What does our coalition look like in a post-Trump environment? The thing is, though, presidents, the best presidents, the people who run the best presidential campaigns, they are by nature coalition builders. George W. Bush did this. You know, he brought people in 2000 and 2004. Barack Obama did this. The ones that know how to get votes go out and find ways to get votes. Trump inherently understood this. Mm-hmm. He now sits at the top of a political party that has everybody from RFK to Mitch McConnell in it. I mean, that's a wide berth. But that's how you win. You don't win by getting smaller. You win by making your party attractive to people who might not have otherwise considered it. The other thing he's done is he's brought people into the party who had no demonstrable history of voting or very little history of voting. They didn't think of themselves as political at all. When I was with him in Michigan on his 100th day in office, I'll paraphrase, but he said, you know, in his speech, you know, whether you're conservative or whether you're liberal, whether you're left or whether you're right, whatever it is, it's just common sense. And his point is, I'm going to try to make common sense decisions. I'm not going to try to say I only am interested in people of a certain ideology. I'm just interested in making the best decision for the American people and what makes the most common sense. That branding has been so attractive to people who never, ever would have imagined they would be voting for a Republican. Mm-hmm. But yet, here they are. Look at the MAHA people, the Make America Healthy Again people. There's a ton of MAHA left out there, people who would think of themselves as being from the left. But Donald Trump made a space for them because he was said, well, some of what you're saying actually is there's common sense in that. I'm willing to adopt that, even though you're not necessarily of my political persuasion all of the time. That's pretty genius. How does the party replicate this in the future? Well, my takeaway is you can't replicate Donald Trump. He is singular. He is unique. The next group, whether it's J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio as a team, which seems like that's the direction we're headed right now, they're not going to be able to replicate his attitude. But what you can replicate is the idea that, hey, we have to be coalition builders. We have to find ways to make the party bigger, not smaller. I think sometimes, honestly, in politics, you're fighting with people who want to get rid of folks. Uh-huh. I want to excommunicate you from this. I want to get rid of you. Trump says, well, wait a minute. I actually want to bring people in. I need to add here to get enough votes to win. He did it twice. I think people would do well to look at his example. He didn't win by getting smaller. He won by making the party bigger. That's really the lesson for the future.
Scott Jennings, you see him on CNN as senior political commentator. You hear him on the Salem Radio Network weekdays. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. The new book is fantastic. It's A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor to write the book, and I appreciate the attention today. Thank you, sir.
Up next, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Classical music is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization. It took 2,000 years and the work of the greatest philosophical, scientific, political, and religious minds to properly tune the piano and make great music possible. But classical music can be intimidating. In Hillsdale College's new, free, online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, you'll learn how to appreciate humanity's greatest musical accomplishments. In the history of classical music, concert pianist and Hillsdale College Distinguished Fellow Hyperion Knight explains how music has developed and what distinguishes the greatest musical achievements of Western civilization. To enroll today and secure your spot in this completely free online course, visit hillsdale.edu/network. That's hillsdale.edu/network.
Great books, great people, great ideas. Learning about these things is critical to being a well-educated human being, and we can help with the Hillsdale Dialogues. Each week, Hillsdale College President Larry Arne joins radio veteran Hugh Hewitt to discuss topics of enduring relevance. And from time to time, they also talk about current events, but always with an eye toward more fundamental truths. And they want you to tune in to a conversation like no other. The Hillsdale Dialogues are posted every Monday on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. Or listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your audio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We invite you to take a moment and subscribe to this show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We're joined by Ava Downs. She's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member of the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, and also 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
For listeners who might not be familiar, tell us what exactly is trap shooting and how does a typical competition work? How does it play out?
So there's two different kinds of trap. There's American trap and international trap. I specialize in international trap with USA Shooting and the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, but we all shoot everything. We shoot the American disciplines as a team. And how an international trap match, such as JO Nationals, works is they're typically 125 targets, and we shoot three rounds the first day, two rounds the second day. And what international trap actually is there's a physical bunker 10 meters in front of you in the ground with 15 machines in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's five stations. Each station has three machines allocated to it, a left, a right, and a straightaway. And the thing is, each of them are all very different. So they can be anywhere from 1 to 3 meters high at a certain distance out. So they can be high or low and anywhere from 45 degrees left to 45 degrees right. So they can really go anywhere and you don't know what's coming out, and they go 72 miles an hour. So that's the quick rundown.
We'll talk a bit more about the Junior Olympic Championship in just a bit, but how did you first get into shooting sports? Was it something you grew up around, or did you find it later on?
So I grew up around it. We've always been a very gun-heavy family. We go up north and shoot. And when I was 7 years old, my dad went out with my uncle and shot sporting clays. And I wanted to go along the next few weeks. So I went along and pushed the buttons. And then I decided I wanted to shoot. And I said only if I had a pink gun. That was the only way I would do it. And so when I was 7 or 8 years old, I started shooting sporting clays with my dad and my uncle. and some other family friends. And then when I was 12, I started competing. So I just grew up with it and had a lot of family involved in it.
Is there something that drew you to trap specifically as a focus here?
I really love all the disciplines, and I think that's the beauty of being on the team here, that I get to still shoot everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I love bunker just because I feel like it's so much fun. I feel like I'm not constantly striving for perfection. Like, there's always something I can work on. It's never good enough. And just how far I can go with it, that I can go to the Olympics in 2028, and I get to travel around the world to World Cups and everything. So it's really incredible.
What are some of the key skills that separate a good shooter from a really great shooter?
It depends per person, but I would say just a lot of drive and determination, because really anyone can get where they need to be, but it's just how much they're willing to put in, how much effort, and how much time at the range, and then also just love for the sport
mm-hmm.
rather than just love for winning. Because if you just love winning, it's really not going to be that enjoyable over time. Like, winning is great, and we all strive to do it, but if you don't love every step of the process, you're never going to really get there. So I think those are two things that definitely separate people.
Talking with Ava Downs, she's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member on the Hillsdale shotgun team, and 2025 junior Olympic champion in international trap. To people watching, perhaps it looks relatively simple. What's tougher about what you do than what people might think?
Well, it looks like we get a very good read on the target every time, or that we're connected. Sometimes they're really hard to see, or you just have a weird move to it. Also, we don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so precise. So if you're just a little off, you can miss. So it looks so simple when we're doing it well, but when we're not doing it well, it's really complicated even for us.
What's your training look like to keep your focus, to keep your reflexes sharp, to stay consistent and compete at an elite level?
For me, I'm out at the range almost every day leading up to a match. So I'll take like 1 or 2 weeks off after a big match, such as after I got back from Greece, I took a week and a half off bunker. Now we have a selection match in a week, so I'm back at it every single day at the range, do meditation every single day, and cut out time for myself to make sure that I have enough time to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And visualization is a huge part of really all sports, or it should be, and it can help you so much. So even when you're not physically doing it, visualizing yourself doing it and running your mental game consistently, even when you're not out there, can be a huge help. So it's a lot of work on and off the range, and a really constant commitment, and just choosing to go there every day and work, even if it's really difficult that day.
Take us through the Junior Olympic Championship, where you won in international trap. That moment you realized you won, what was the whole experience like?
Well, I started off the final not well. I shot a good match, but I started off not well, and I was kind of looking back at my coach, and I was like, what is going on? I don't know what to do. This is not going well. And I was just like, I can't smooth out. And he looked back at me and was just like, just trying to motion for me to smooth out and calm down. And then all of a sudden it clicked. And then it was like, okay, I'm behind. I have a lot of ground to make up. And then I had a really great, like, back three quarters of the final. And then by the last pass or so, I knew that I had won. So it was just really exciting, and I just wanted to finish out my final with a good score and just see how much I could recover. And it was just a really great confidence boost, and it was very exciting because the next few days I left for a couple different matches, including a World Cup in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice to have a win going into that, to have my mind straight for when I got there.
What do you learn about yourself through the Junior Olympic competition, through the World Cup competition in Italy? What does competing against the high-level talent do for you?
It always pushes me to be better and shows that no matter what, it's never going to be like good enough unless you keep trying. It's taught me how to really take care of myself and prioritize myself. It's taught me that I'm more than just my wins and losses and everything than that, because competing at such a high level, it's very easy to forget that you're not just inherently tied to your sport.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taught me that, and it's given me a lot of really great friendships and relationships with the people I travel with for Team USA, but also the people I've met overseas. So I've learned a lot about that, and I've learned how to win and how to lose, and I think that has been huge, and especially with the work I've done on my mental management training through the years, it's really been cool to see that come to fruition and learn how to adapt and change and know what I need on any given day.
Abe is a junior here at Hillsdale College, in addition to being a championship shooter, and that's a challenge in and of itself, of course. How do you balance that, the college life and classes and coursework and also training and competing at the national level?
So it's not always easy, but over time I've done a lot of different mental management work and training, including with winning in mind and mental management systems with Brian and Lanny Basham. And that has been huge because when I was a freshman in high school, I decided that this was something I was going to lean towards pursuing. And Brian told me that anyone who's successful knows what they're doing any minute of every day. And that if somebody asks me what I'm doing at 2:30 p.m. two Thursdays from now, I better have a pretty good idea. So I've learned how to manage my time and learned how to actually integrate that into my life. So I know when I need to get stuff done. I have like a planner and like a calendar where I have all my due dates and just work through it. And sometimes it really sucks when I get back from a match and I have to take 5 exams in 1 week, but you just kind of got to tough it out and embrace the suck, and then it'll eventually get better.
How do you think your time here at Hillsdale has helped to shape you as an athlete?
It has really helped me. I've had so many opportunities through the team, but also I can grow as a person here at Hillsdale, and that has helped me to be a better competitor and better person, and I really appreciate that. And it's impacted really every aspect of my life, including my training and competitions.
And you mentioned 2028 a little bit earlier in the conversation. So what are your goals moving forward, both in competition and beyond?
So my goals moving forward are the Olympics in 2028 in LA. That is the main goal, and I have a lot of different things leading up to that. So that's really the big goal. But then after that, it would be 2032 and 2036 and continuing on. Yeah, and getting my degree from Hillsdale and being able to balance a professional life and an athletic life, because Hillsdale has also taught me that I don't want to just be an athlete all the time, that I also want to be able to channel myself into other things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's very overwhelming and can be very easy to just tie your worth with your sport or not have another outlet for things. So I think being at Hillsdale and then also being in a sorority and being involved in other things has helped me with that. And I want to be able to continue that through my time at Hillsdale and post-grad from Hillsdale.
What would you say to young shooters out there, especially young women perhaps, who might be interested in getting into the sport but aren't sure where or how to start?
I would say to go find your local gun club, find your local shotgun range. You can typically rent guns and rent instructors and just go out and give it a shot. Try it. I know we have Liberty camps and stuff like that here at Hillsdale.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the area, it's really great to go to those and try it out. Or if you're at the college, to try and do, like, we have basic shotgun classes. So there's a lot of entry. I got started in the SCTP if you want to start competing. And to do that and just keep working at it, because if you put your mind to it, you can really accomplish something great, whether that be your end goal or all the steps along the way.
Ava Downs is a junior at Hillsdale College and also a member of the Hillsdale Shotgun Team, 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Scott Jennings. His new book is A Revolution of Common Sense. Also current Hillsdale student Ava Downs. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Ted Bambino, president of the Redding Rodeo. We are thrilled to be partners with the Redding Rancheria. They are an integral part to the success of the Redding Rodeo.
Hi, I'm Julie. This is Debbie. We're here at the Shasta Family YMCA.
Hi, and I'm Kristen, the CEO. And on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for the many years of support for our programs and our projects like the playground.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Introducing Jackpot Blitz, the industry's most advanced digital poker table designed for players who crave the energy of live play. Seamlessly jump into live multi-table tournaments and make your moves with just a tap. No dealers, no delays, just pure poker. Hands are dealt instantly and side pots handled automatically. And the pace, whoa, blazing fast. This isn't just the future of poker, it's happening now. Play smarter, play faster, play Jackpot Blitz. For complete details, visit WinRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number, and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest errors. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Redding and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Workers' compensation cases can move really slowly, and it's frustrating. Don't get pressured into hiring the first law firm you meet with just because they were fast to get you on their schedule. Your case impacts every aspect of your life. You want a local attorney that understands that and will get you the best outcome. Interview Patrick Orman of Gorman Law to see if he is the right attorney and to see if you really need an attorney. He will tell you the truth. Call 530-262-2168 or schedule online at GormanComp.com. Law. Consultations and workers' comp are always free.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Hello.
This is Carl Bott.
And Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Ready to grow your business? KCNR is the last locally owned and operated radio station in our area. We reach thousands of listeners in our community every single day. Our professional production team creates custom ads that grab attention and get the results for your business. And you'll be surprised on how affordable advertising with KCNR is. Our listeners are your customers. Call Sue McClain today at 530-605-4565.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1450.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Redding. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Breaking news from Washington, I'm Bernie Bennett on Town Hall. Correspondent Julie Walker reports U.S. officials have laid out some of the details of the U.S. military strike against Venezuela that led to the capture of leader Nicolas Maduro.
Joint Chiefs Chairman General Dan Kane says for months U.S. forces practiced to capture Venezuelan President Maduro, and in the end more than 150 aircraft launched from across the Western Hemisphere, including F-18s, F-22s, and F-35 fighter jets, B-1 bombers, and drones.
We rehearse again and again, not to get it right, but to ensure that we cannot get it wrong.
No U.S. forces were killed, but one aircraft was hit but was able to fly out. I'm Julie Walker.
President Trump is putting the world on notice after the U.S. captured Maduro. White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reports.
Following the military operation, said the U.S. is going to control Venezuela during the transition and said other countries should learn a lesson.
This extremely successful operation should serve as warning to anyone who would threaten American sovereignty or endanger American lives.
Nicolas Maduro and his wife were taken from their home on a military base in the Venezuelan capital and are set to face criminal charges in the United States. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Revelers chanted liberty and draped Venezuelan flags over their shoulders in South Florida Saturday to celebrate the U.S. military operation to capture Nicolas Maduro and move him from the country. It's a stunning outcome that they had longed for. It also has left them wondering what comes next in their homeland. People gathered for a rally in Doral as word spread of Maduro's ouster. Doral is the Miami suburb where President Donald Trump has recently and roughly half of the population is of Venezuelan descent. He has a golf course there as well. This is townhall.com.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-555-2085. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-555-2085. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-555-2085. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-555-2085. 800-555-2085.
Correspondent Regina Garcia Cano reports from Caracas on the situation following the capture of Venezuela's leader.
I'm in Venezuela's capital, Caracas, where overnight multiple explosions rang out. I counted at least 7. The U.S. government has now described those explosions as a large-scale strike against Venezuela. In Caracas, the streets are unusually quiet for a Saturday. Very few cars and motorcycles can be seen going by. At least near the presidential palace, however, some Maduro supporters have gathered and have been chanting, bring Maduro back. Venezuela's Vice President, Delcy Rodríguez, has said Maduro's whereabouts remain unknown.
No hay sometimiento. No hay subordinación.
And she has demanded proof of life.
Iran's supreme leader has addressed ongoing protests there, insisting rioters must be put in their place. The protests, sparked by Iran's struggling economy, have been going on for a week. On Saturday, violence surrounding the demonstrations killed more people. More on these stories at townhall.com. The American Kennel Club added 3 more breeds to its recognized list. Julie Walker reports.
One of the newcomers is the Teddy Roosevelt Terrier. Another, the Russian Svetnaya Balanka, a lapdog developed in Soviet-era Russia. The third, a centuries-old French hunting hound called the Basset Fauve de Bretagne. The AKC now recognizes 205 breeds. Recognition means eligibility for many U.S. dog shows and can increase a breed's visibility to the pet-loving public. Julie Walker, New York.
In Battle, Wisconsin, Judge Hannah Dugan, who was convicted of obstruction last week for helping an immigrant invade federal officers, has sent her resignation letter to the governor. The letter was sent Saturday. Republicans have been making plans to impeach her ever since her December 19th conviction. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Bernie Bennett in Washington.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
For a lot of people in the media, he broke them, you know. Mm-hmm. He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly, and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Scott Jennings, senior political commentator at CNN, and also author of the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. We'll talk in depth with Scott about that book on today's program. Also later on, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. First, we're joined by Scott Jennings. He's CNN senior political commentator, also radio host for the Salem Radio Network. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the time today. Honored to be with you.
I don't know if you get this as much as maybe you did a year ago, but I still hear people say this, which is, where the heck did Scott Jennings come from? All of a sudden, election 2024, everyone's watching viral videos on X and elsewhere, and this guy Scott Jennings is making points we all wish we could make when leftists make their arguments. So tell people a bit about your background. Where did Scott Jennings come from?
Well, a long time ago, he came from Kentucky. I'm a Western Kentuckian, grew up in a little town called Dawson Springs, and also attended the University of Louisville. That's where I graduated from. And, you know, years ago, I thought I was going to be in journalism. I was a radio news anchor in Louisville while I was in college. But in 2000, I decided to join the Bush for President campaign, and that began my journey in politics. But, you know, I never really forgot about my love of the media, my love of broadcasting. And in 2017, I got a chance to join CNN. You know, for a few years, it was really a very much a part-time job for me. But the 2024 campaign, plus the advent of this 10 o'clock debating show, which we now have for the last couple of years, really gave me a chance to do what I can do. And so I really credit CNN, honestly. They decided they wanted to put a conservative on the air who was going to fight hard for how half the country sees the world. And I'm doing that every day and making arguments and debating the left and doing it often 4 and 5 on 1. And honestly, I think it's working.
People like you, I think, because you are measured and leveled and logical, even in the face of perhaps some hyperactive activity from the left on the panel. What is going through your mind as you await your turn, let your colleague finish before you rebut that argument? What are you thinking about?
Well, look, I think the TV debates are for conservatives. I think the way we win is by keeping our wits about us and also arguing in good faith and in good humor. I don't think we win by just simply yelling louder than the other people. I don't really care for crosstalk. I don't like it when the whole thing just gets tied up in a shouting match. I believe in conservative arguments. So I believe in letting these conversations unfold. And when you do that, then you get a chance to talk. And if you give me 60 seconds, there's a really good chance I'm going to explain why the left is wrong, why the conservatives have it right, and why our point of view right now seems to be ascendant in America. But I think a lot of people get into these debates, they get overly emotional, they can't control themselves, and they stop making factual or logical arguments, and they just start operating out of emotion or anecdote. And I just don't personally find that to be persuasive. And I think most people who watch debates and enjoy debates would rather hear someone argue from a position of fact and logic and reason as opposed to just constant emotional overreaction.
Scott Jennings, the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. And Scott, as I read A Revolution of Common Sense, it occurred to me that this is a book as much about the president's cabinet as it is about the president himself. Scott Bessent, Marco Rubio, Doug Burgum, Christopher Wright, Elon Musk for a time as well in that inner circle. How do you explain that a guy who is painted as a dictator and an autocrat put so much trust in these advisors and cabinet members who are so sharp on the issues?
Well, that's a great question. And the one big observation that I was able to make, I think, after hanging around the White House and spending some time with the president and just talking to all these people, is just what a premium Trump put on picking the right team this time around. I think that's one of the biggest differences between this administration and his first. He's got the correct team that matched his leadership style. So you look at the people that he's chosen, Bessent, Rubio, Burgum, and the others that you mentioned. They best match how he wants to run the country. I think in the first term, he didn't quite have that. Not that those people were bad people. It's just when you have a leader, when you have a manager, the team has to match the style. And this time around, they got that right. I can tell you this. I don't know who was running the country, really, during the Biden years. I'm not sure any of us do. But I know who's running it right now. It's Donald Trump. And the way he's running it is out of the Oval Office, behind the Resolute Desk, and surrounded by a cabinet and a team of advisors who are not there to execute their will. They're there to execute the president's will based on the results of the last election. So I really do think he puts a lot of trust in these guys. And he'll tell you, you know, Rubio's been an all-star. Bessent's been an all-star. Mm-hmm. And all these people he has put in place, what are they doing? They're taking his priorities that he clearly laid out to the American people, and they're executing them in their own divisions. And I, you know, my personal view is that Bessent and Rubio have been the all-stars of the cabinet. And you hear that constantly from conservatives that you talk to around and around the country. They're just so impressed with these two guys. And you look at their portfolios, and, you know, a great chunk of the president's first year in office has fallen right in the lap of Rubio and Bessent, and they have executed flawlessly.
On Marco Rubio, the president has had some relationships with, say, older guard Republicans that have fizzled after a time. Rubio's a guy that sort of predates the president in terms of his political stature, but someone who seems to have grown in stature with the president and grown in trust with the president. Why is Rubio so strong inside the administration?
Well, he has been, I think, both a skillful operator inside the building over at the State Department, but also externally. I mean, you look at all the serious issues that have come up on the world stage in the last year. I mean, the president has spent a lot of time on foreign policy. Rubio's been in the middle of all of it. You look at the peace agreements they've negotiated. You look at dealing with the migration crisis going on in our hemisphere. I mean, across the board, usually on a weekly basis, Trump is doing something that involves the portfolio of the State Department. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, Rubio's all over that as well. And so one of the reasons he's been able to grow in stature is just because the president has put so much on his plate, and the president himself has focused so much on these issues. It demanded a Secretary of State who could rise to the occasion. There's no doubt that Rubio has done that. And I think what conservatives love about Rubio is just how articulate he is at explaining, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's why it's going to work. He is one of the smoothest communicators in the cabinet. And as you know, with Trump, being able to communicate externally is a big part of what it means to work for him. And I just don't think anybody has communicated the America First worldview better than Marco Rubio. He has shown extreme skill set here, both in terms of internal management, but external communications. He's really the whole package right now and is doing a terrific job, in my opinion.
Scott Jennings with us, CNN senior political commentator. You hear him hosting on Salem Radio Network as well. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. You mentioned this first year or so has been a heavy foreign policy year for President Trump. Inside A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point that it's actually surprising how not friendly the president has been to Russia since taking office. That, of course, goes against some conventional wisdom that says, oh, Trump's a Russian stooge. How has the president been perhaps an enemy to Russia during his time in the Oval Office.
Well, I think this is one of the most sinister narratives, and it's left over from the beginning of his first administration when every Democrat in the country convinced themselves that Russia had stolen the election, which, of course, we now know is completely, totally false and fabricated. But as a leftover of that era, they are now convinced that every foreign policy move the president makes is done so in service to Vladimir Putin. The record is exactly the opposite. Yes, it is absolutely true that he's trying to achieve a peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. I tell you one thing I learned about Donald Trump. The man is serious about peace. He hates war. He doesn't like war. He doesn't like the idea of people dying all over the world. And he believes if you have a strong American president, you could bring about peace in the world. And he has done that in several conflicts. But on the Russia piece, look what he's done with NATO, getting them to agree to go to 5% for their defense spending levels. That's never been done before. He has provided assistance and weapons to Ukraine. You know, he's had Zelensky in the Oval Office, and although they've had difficult conversations, there's really no question, where the president aligned with our allies in Europe, aligned with NATO, there's no question where he is on this. And he has time and again, I think, grown more and more frustrated with Vladimir Putin, who is rebuffing his efforts to try to get to a peace agreement. I think the president knows what the score here is. He's dealing with a Russian president who only understands toughness. He only understands strength. And I think that's what the president is doing when he's helping our allies understand the wisdom of investing more in their own national defense. He has strengthened NATO far beyond what any president's been able to do when everybody was predicting the opposite, that he was going to destroy NATO. I just think time and again, these attacks have been hurled at Trump on the Russia stuff, and he constantly proves that it's not true, yet this narrative persists. You sort of have this unholy alliance on this between Democrats and the media. They just sort of take it as an article of faith, and they can go out and make these flippant comments. Oh, the president, you know, he likes Vladimir Putin. You have no evidence of that whatsoever, but you do have evidence to the contrary. It's just sad to me that they won't talk about it that way.
That's Scott Jennings of CNN and the Salem Radio Network. We'll talk more with him about his new book in just a moment. But first, I want to invite you to help shape the future of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, which includes this show you're listening to right now. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu, click on the survey pop-up, and you can take our very first listener survey. By doing so, you'll help the Hillsdale College Podcast Network reach millions of Americans with the timeless truths that make this country great. But we need your help. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu, click on the survey pop-up to take the survey. Thanks for listening, and thanks in advance for your feedback. We continue with Scott Jennings from CNN and the Salem Radio Network. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, you mentioned the media. There's a chapter in which you coined the phrase political information distribution complex in the way that information flows from the legacy media, mainstream media, to the American public. Is that changing a bit? We see some changes at the Washington Post, both on the op-ed page and among the paper's reporters. We see changes at CBS, Barry Weiss and Free Press people coming in to the CBS network. Are executives realizing at last that something needs to change?
Well, I think maybe yes. I think we have a long way to go, though. I think the American media is in such a deep hole with the people. You look at the confidence in institutions measurements taken by Gallup. I mean, people don't have confidence in the institution of the media. People want there to be a trusted free press. I certainly do. I work in it. You know, I believe that we need a trusted free press. We just don't have that right now, but we could get it. And I think things are changing, but I think we have a long way to go. And I think Trump, unfortunately, for a lot of people in the media, he broke them. You know, He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that. And I think in our political coverage, the reason I point that phrase political information distribution complex is because on election night 2024, you know, I made this long speech after we finally declared Trump the winner on CNN about the death of the political information distribution complex and about how it had misled the American people about the state of the election, about what was happening in the last 3 weeks of the election, about the issues going on in the election. It had worked so hard to elect Kamala Harris, and it had convinced people that she was surging at the end, when in fact we know the opposite. was true. And so I think people have awakened to the idea that they're not always getting all the information from one source. And people right now are seeking out independent sources. They're looking at folks right now who are existing outside of the mainstream media space for information. That is the market screaming at you to make changes. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things you mentioned, I think, are good. There's a long way to go. I'm a huge Barry Weiss fan. I mean, she may save us all. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, but I think that's someone who understands what are we trying to do here? We're trying to give people the truth. We're trying to tell people the truth. We're trying to get people information, not narratives. And I just think that's what people are hungry for. They don't want narratives. They want to know the facts. They want to know the information. But often what they get are narratives, just like on the Russia conversation. They've mm-hmm. been fed a narrative about that. But I'm not sure they've been fed the truth about it. But they get plenty of narratives. But I think there's something amiss here, and they're hungry for truth instead of narrative.
Scott Jennings with us. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. The other big issue in President Trump's first year has been the southern border and immigration. And President Trump, back in that first term, first campaign, of course, made the promise that we'd get tired of winning. And it was kind of a joke, of course. But I wonder, Scott, if the president has been too successful on the southern border, because that was a disaster and he cleaned it up very quickly. All it took was a change in the Oval Office. But now that has disappeared from the news cycle. It is not as big of a deal as it was perhaps 6, 8, 12 months ago. Texas is redistricting, thinking that some of those Hispanic gains along the border will hold. And I just wonder, if has the president been too successful on the southern border?
Well, he has. There's no question. I think this has been the swiftest and most important accomplishment of his administration. I think the immigration issue is what propelled him in the first place when he first ran for office. It certainly propelled a big part of his campaign last year. And you're exactly right. All we needed was a new president. We haven't passed any new laws. That's what's amazing about this. We've mm-hmm. not passed a single immigration law. We're just enforcing the laws that exist. And that shows you the difference between this administration, which is simply enforcing the law, and the previous, which was instructing federal law enforcement not to enforce the law. They wanted a culture of open borders. And of course, you know all the societal ills that flow from that. Trump shows up, changes the attitude. The border is closed. I do think we're having a pretty significant national debate about internal enforcement, but I still think President Trump is right side up on it. I still think the American people believe, you know, we let 20 million people into this country. We can't just turn a blind eye to what that means for our society. It doesn't mean that they're all bad people or that they're all violent criminals, but it does mean they all broke our laws. And it does beg the question, how permissive are we going to be? And the more permissive you are on amnesty for things like that, the more you encourage people to come here. I think Trump knows that. So part of the internal enforcement argument is not just, well, we have to get people out because they broke our laws. It's that we cannot go back to sending a signal to the rest of the world. Just get here and it'll probably work out for you. Mm-hmm. That attitude is what got us in the mess in the first place. And so I totally agree with you that he's been successful. But honestly, I'm not sure the job is done. Mm-hmm. The internal enforcement piece goes on. Democrats are fighting hard against it. And honestly, if we ever got a new administration or people in charge that had a different attitude, you could see how quickly you could slip back into the old ways. Now I think it's also evolving into this fight with the narco-terrorists. They're sinking the boats out in our hemisphere now. Mm-hmm. They're amassing military power to do that. I think the signal goes beyond just simple immigration enforcement. The message is we're just not going to allow the United States to be taken advantage of by Central and South America anymore, whether that's via just simple immigration or whether that's via this narco-terrorist system that exists that puts all this poison into our country that kills hundreds of thousands of people a year.
Scott Jennings, there's a section in A Revolution of Common Sense on DEI, and you expound on this thought, this quote from Chris Caldwell, who says that this rolling back of DEI is the biggest policy change in decades. Why is the activity against DEI, the elimination of DEI, both governmental and then the influence on the private sector, perhaps an underreported, underappreciated part of President Trump's second term?
Well, one of the things that he has done is he has, you know, I think we had a wet blanket on us in the country. Everybody was sort of tiptoeing around, being forced to speak this language of DEI, being forced to say things out loud, candidly on other cultural issues, on the transgender ideology. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at how our culture had been overtaken by people who had just invented a new language and invented a bunch of nonsense and forcing everyone in government and in corporate America to live by these edicts. And of course, the Biden administration definitely, as a policy matter, installed this in the federal government. They pushed this. Nobody really liked it. Nobody really thinks it's a good idea to operate by the edicts of DEI or by the edicts of transgender ideology. And so Trump comes along and basically had the courage to say what everyone else is already thinking. He removes it from the federal government. It's no longer federal policy. What they want to do is find people who are best for the job. And that's the trait that they're looking for. Who's the best qualified person? By doing that, I think he gave cover and courage to everybody in corporate America to say, yeah, we don't have to do this either. Mm-hmm. And I think the vast majority of Americans agree with the president on this. It is a major division between the two parties. The Democrats are captured by this identity politics, ideologies that are all wrapped around identity. And what he wants and what he would say is that that's just not common sense. You know, what's common sense is who's the right person for the job? Who's got the best qualifications? Shouldn't that be what we're looking for first and foremost? That is a common sense way to approach the job that most Americans agree with. And by ripping it out of the federal government, he basically created a permission structure for everybody else in America to do the same thing. And I think there is relief, absolute relief across corporate America that Trump had the courage to finally turn us away from this ideology, which, by the way, it's bad for culture. It's bad for America. It's bad for people. And it's not a good way to run a government, certainly not a good way to run a company or any kind of an organization. Trump knew it. He ran on it. And he followed through on the promise, and I think people are appreciative of it.
Scott Jennings, in A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point explicitly at least once, and I think it comes through in different ways, that Donald Trump, despite, again, media reports, is a very curious person and wants to know from people around him. You were inside a few of these meetings while researching and writing A Revolution of Common Sense. How does Donald Trump get his information? How does he want it presented to him? What questions does he want answered?
That is a great question, and it is a big observation and takeaway for me having written this book. Observing the president in a meeting, I think the caricature of him portrayed by the media is totally inaccurate. He is extremely curious. He asks a lot of questions. He likes to watch debates between advisors, people who have slightly different opinions about things. He does ask for everyone's opinion in the room. I watched him do it in the Oval Office. I watched him do it on Air Force One when I went to Michigan with him on his 100th day in office. He convenes people. He listens. And then he makes decisions. He's decisive. I think a difference between him and Biden, Biden was famously indecisive or uninvolved. Trump is involved. He's involved in the details. He's involved in how decisions are made. But once a decision is made, it's made. He's a decisive person. That is a trait that I think makes for a good presidency. So my observations are he absolutely likes to get information from people. He takes in a lot of information. He is as in tune with the daily news and cultural zeitgeist as anyone. And so when you think about, you know, what does the president know? Who is he talking to? He talks to a wide range of people, but they're not all yes men, and they're not all telling him what he wants to hear. There are a lot of people, I think, around him who are constantly debating about what the right thing to do is. But at the end of the day, they all know who the decision maker is. And the president also knows ultimately it's my responsibility to make a decision. You can't debate things endlessly. At some point, you have to decide what direction we're going. And I think he's been good at both. Putting together these internal conversations, but then being decisive when the time came to make a decision.
Scott, we talked earlier that this has been a foreign policy focused presidency for much of this first year of the second term. And President Trump has a very different view about United States power than Joe Biden did. What does President Trump understand about U.S. leadership on the world stage and showing and using, when necessary, U.S. power on the world stage?
Great question. Well, first of all, he understands what it means to have a strong American president who's willing to engage and what it means to have a weak and indecisive president. That's what we had before. So he believes that if the American president is strong, he believes that if the American president projects confidence and strength and decisiveness, then look, we are the world superpower. We are the indispensable country in the world. Our engagement with a president like that can force people to the table, can bring people around and get people to, you know, do things. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I don't think there's anybody except for Donald Trump who could have convened the Arab states, his special relationship with Netanyahu. I mean, the people that he had to get in the room, he gets in the room and he gets them to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden couldn't figure that out. He's done that in little areas all over the world. The one area that eludes him is Russia, Ukraine. And he is working earnestly towards it. It's probably the most complicated situation that he is dealing with. But I know he's focused on it and trying to get to an outcome every single day. But in most cases, I think his view is that if the American president projects strength, if we say we're not going to put up with nonsense here, we're not going to put up with bad actors, we're not going to put up with people, you know, agreeing to something and then violating it the next day. He says, we're not going to put up with narco-terrorists in our own hemisphere. You need to help us with that. Look at what's going on with Mexico. We've had a massive drop in fentanyl coming across the border. Yes, the border is closed because of Trump. Some of that, though, remember at the beginning of the administration, he slapped the tariffs on Mexico and said, this is how serious I am about needing you to work with me on getting fentanyl down. I don't want it coming across the border anymore. That has been a major success. They're not covering it, but it's been a major success. Mm-hmm. None of this happens if these other countries don't take the president seriously. And you have to take Trump seriously. He has shown, if you don't take me seriously, I will take action. And people respect that. And so it goes into this idea of, is the president strong or is he weak? Is the president decisive or is he constantly wringing his hands? Is he constantly indecisive? Right now we have a strong, decisive president, and it's yielding results.
Final question for Scott Jennings. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, is available now. A quote from the book: Trump has expanded the definition of Republicans so it includes people who never have thought of themselves as Republicans until Trump invited them in. First of all, I think a great point that the invitation is such an important part of this process. You have to go ask for the vote. But this has led to a coalition, a wide coalition. It's led to people like RFK and Lori Chavez de Remer in the cabinet and people who perhaps are not historically Republican type selections. So the big question, how do you hold this coalition together when Trump is not going to appear on the ballot anymore? And how do you convince Republican voters to go out and vote when Donald Trump is not on the ballot?
Well, that's the number one strategic conversation that the Republican Party is wrestling with right now. What does our coalition look like in a post-Trump environment? The thing is, though, presidents, the best presidents, the people who run the best presidential campaigns, they are by nature coalition builders. George W. Bush did this. You know, he brought people in 2000 and 2004. Barack Obama did this. The ones that know how to get votes go out and find ways to get votes. Trump inherently understood this. Mm-hmm. He now sits at the top of a political party that has everybody from RFK to Mitch McConnell in it. I mean, that's a wide berth. But that's how you win. You don't win by getting smaller. You win by making your party attractive to people who might not have otherwise considered it. The other thing he's done is he's brought people into the party who had no demonstrable history of voting or very little history of voting. They didn't think of themselves as political at all. When I was with him in Michigan on his 100th day in office, I'll paraphrase, but he said, you know, in his speech, you know, whether you're conservative or whether you're liberal, whether you're left or whether you're right, whatever it is, it's just common sense. And his point is, I'm going to try to make common sense decisions. I'm not going to try to say I only am interested in people of a certain ideology. I'm just interested in making the best decision for the American people and what makes the most common sense. That branding has been so attractive to people who never, ever would have imagined they would be voting for a Republican. Mm-hmm. But yet, here they are. Look at the MAHA people, the Make America Healthy Again people. There's a ton of MAHA left out there, people who would think of themselves as being from the left. But Donald Trump made a space for them because he was said, well, some of what you're saying actually is there's common sense in that. I'm willing to adopt that, even though you're not necessarily of my political persuasion all of the time. That's pretty genius. How does the party replicate this in the future? Well, my takeaway is you can't replicate Donald Trump. He is singular. He is unique. The next group, whether it's J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio as a team, which seems like that's the direction we're headed right now, they're not going to be able to replicate his attitude. But what you can replicate is the idea that, hey, we have to be coalition builders. We have to find ways to make the party bigger, not smaller. I think sometimes, honestly, in politics, you're fighting with people who want to get rid of folks. Uh-huh. I want to excommunicate you from this. I want to get rid of you. Trump says, well, wait a minute. I actually want to bring people in. I need to add here to get enough votes to win. He did it twice. I think people would do well to look at his example. He didn't win by getting smaller. He won by making the party bigger. That's really the lesson for the future.
Scott Jennings, you see him on CNN as senior political commentator. You hear him on the Salem Radio Network weekdays. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. The new book is fantastic. It's A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor to write the book, and I appreciate the attention today. Thank you, sir.
Up next, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Classical music is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization. It took 2,000 years and the work of the greatest philosophical, scientific, political, and religious minds to properly tune the piano and make great music possible. But classical music can be intimidating. In Hillsdale College's new, free, online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, you'll learn how to appreciate humanity's greatest musical accomplishments. In the history of classical music, concert pianist and Hillsdale College Distinguished Fellow Hyperion Knight explains how music has developed and what distinguishes the greatest musical achievements of Western civilization. To enroll today and secure your spot in this completely free online course, visit hillsdale.edu/network. That's hillsdale.edu/network.
Great books, great people, great ideas. Learning about these things is critical to being a well-educated human being, and we can help with the Hillsdale Dialogues. Each week, Hillsdale College President Larry Arne joins radio veteran Hugh Hewitt to discuss topics of enduring relevance. And from time to time, they also talk about current events, but always with an eye toward more fundamental truths. And they want you to tune in to a conversation like no other. The Hillsdale Dialogues are posted every Monday on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. Or listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your audio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We invite you to take a moment and subscribe to this show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We're joined by Ava Downs. She's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member of the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, and also 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
For listeners who might not be familiar, tell us what exactly is trap shooting and how does a typical competition work? How does it play out?
So there's two different kinds of trap. There's American trap and international trap. I specialize in international trap with USA Shooting and the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, but we all shoot everything. We shoot the American disciplines as a team. And how an international trap match, such as JO Nationals, works is they're typically 125 targets, and we shoot three rounds the first day, two rounds the second day. And what international trap actually is there's a physical bunker 10 meters in front of you in the ground with 15 machines in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's five stations. Each station has three machines allocated to it, a left, a right, and a straightaway. And the thing is, each of them are all very different. So they can be anywhere from 1 to 3 meters high at a certain distance out. So they can be high or low and anywhere from 45 degrees left to 45 degrees right. So they can really go anywhere and you don't know what's coming out, and they go 72 miles an hour. So that's down.
We'll talk a bit more about the Junior Olympic Championship in just a bit, but how did you first get into shooting sports? Was it something you grew up around, or did you find it later on?
So I grew up around it. We've always been a very gun-heavy family. We go up north and shoot. And when I was 7 years old, my dad went out with my uncle and shot sporting clays, and I wanted to go along the next few weeks. So I went along and pushed the buttons, and then I decided I wanted to shoot. And I said only if I had a pink gun. That was the only way I would do it. And so when I was 7 or 8 years old, I started shooting sporting clays with my dad and my uncle and some other family friends. And then when I was 12, I started competing. So I just grew up with it and had a lot of family involved in it.
Is there something that drew you to trap specifically as a focus here?
I really love all the disciplines, and I think that's the beauty of being on the team here, that I get to still shoot everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I love bunker just because I feel like it's so much fun. I feel like I'm not constantly striving for perfection. Like, there's always something I can work on. It's never good enough. And just how far I can go with it, that I can go to the Olympics in 2028, and I get to travel around the world to World Cups and everything. So it's really incredible.
What are some of the key skills that separate a good shooter from a really great shooter?
It depends per person, but I would say just a lot of drive and determination, because really anyone can get where they need to be, but it's just how much they're willing to put in, how much effort, and how much time at the range, and then also just love for the sport,
mm-hmm.
rather than just love for winning. Because if you just love winning, it's really not going to be that enjoyable over time. Like, winning is great, and we all strive to do it, but if you don't love every step of the process, you're never going to really get there. So I think those are two things that definitely separate people.
Talking with Ava Downs, she's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member on the Hillsdale shotgun team, and 2025 junior Olympic champion in international trap. To people watching, perhaps it looks relatively simple. What's tougher about what you do than what people might think?
Well, it looks like we get a very good read on the target every time, or that we're connected. Sometimes they're really hard to see, or you just have a weird move to it. Also, we don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so precise. So if you're just a little off, you can miss. So it looks so simple when we're doing it well, but when we're not doing it well, it's really complicated even for us.
What's your training look like to keep your focus, to keep your reflexes sharp, to stay consistent and compete at an elite level?
For me, I'm out at the range almost every day leading up to a match. So I'll take like 1 or 2 weeks off after a big match, such as after I got back from Greece, I took a week and a half off bunker. Now we have a selection match in a week, so I'm back at it every single day at the range, do meditation every single day, and cut out time for myself to make sure that I have enough time to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And visualization is a huge part of really all sports, or it should be, and it can help you so much. So even when you're not physically doing it, visualizing yourself doing it and running your mental game consistently, even when you're not out there, can be a huge help. So it's a lot of work on and off the range, and a really constant commitment, and just choosing to go there every day and work, even if it's really difficult that day.
Take us through the Junior Olympic Championship where you won in international trap. That moment you realized you won, what was the whole experience like?
Well, I started off the final not well. I shot a good match, but I started off not well, and I was kind of looking back at my coach, and I was like, what is going on? I don't know what to do. This is not going well. And I was just like, I can't smooth out. And he looked back at me and was just like, just trying to motion for me to smooth out and calm down. And then all of a sudden it clicked. And then it was like, okay, I'm behind. I have a lot of ground to make up. And then I had a really great, like, back three quarters of the final. And then by the last pass or so, I knew that I had won. So it was just really exciting, and I just wanted to finish out my final with a good score and just see how much I could recover. And it was just a really great confidence boost, and it was very exciting because the next few days I left for a couple different matches, including a World Cup in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice to have a win going into that, to have my mind straight for when I got there.
What do you learn about yourself through the Junior Olympic competition, through the World Cup competition in Italy? what is competing against the high level talent do for you?
It always pushes me to be better and shows that no matter what, it's never going to be like good enough unless you keep trying. It's taught me how to really take care of myself and prioritize myself. It's taught me that I'm more than just my wins and losses and everything than that, because competing at such a high level, it's very easy to forget that you're not just inherently tied to your sport.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taught me that, and it's given me a lot of really great friendships and relationships with the people I travel with for Team USA, but also the people I've met overseas. So I've learned a lot about that, and I've learned how to win and how to lose, and I think that has been huge, and especially with the work I've done on my mental management training through the years, it's really been cool to see that come to fruition and learn how to adapt and change and know what I need on any given day.
Ava's a junior here at Hillsdale College, in addition to being a championship shooter, and that's a challenge in and of itself, of course. How do you balance that, the college life and classes and coursework and also training and competing at the national level?
So it's not always easy, but over time I've done a lot of different mental management work and training, including with winning in mind and mental management systems with Brian and Lanny Basham. And that has been huge, because when I was a freshman in high school, I decided that this was something I was going to lean towards pursuing. And Brian told me that anyone who's successful knows what they're doing any minute of every day, and that if somebody asks me what I'm doing at 2:30 p.m. two Thursdays from now, I better have a pretty good idea. So I've learned how to manage my time and learned how to actually integrate that into my life. So I know when I need to get stuff done. I have like a planner and like a calendar where I have all my due dates and just work through it. And sometimes it really sucks when I get back from a match and I have to take 5 exams in 1 week, but you just kind of got to tough it out and embrace the suck, and then it'll eventually get better.
How do you think your time here at Hillsdale has helped to shape you as an athlete?
It has really helped me. I've had so many opportunities through the team, but also I can grow as a person here at Hillsdale, and that has helped me to be a better competitor and better person, and I really appreciate that. And it's impacted really every aspect of my life, including my training and competitions.
And you mentioned 2028 a little bit earlier in the conversation. So what are your goals moving forward, both in competition and beyond?
So my goals moving forward are the Olympics in 2028 in LA. That is the main goal, and I have a lot of different things leading up to that. So that's really the big goal. But then after that, it would be 2032 and 2036 and continuing on. Yeah, and getting my degree from Hillsdale and being able to balance a professional life and an athletic life, because Hillsdale has also taught me that I don't want to just be an athlete all the time, that I also want to be able to channel myself into other things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's very overwhelming and can be very easy to just tie your worth with your sport or not have another outlet for things. So I think being at Hillsdale and then also being in a sorority and being involved in other things has helped me with that. And I want to be able to continue that through my time at Hillsdale and post-grad from Hillsdale.
What would you say to young shooters out there, especially young women perhaps, who might be interested in getting into the sport but aren't sure where or how to start?
I would say to go find your local gun club, find your local shotgun range. You can typically rent guns and rent instructors and just go out and give it a shot. Try it. I know we have Liberty camps and stuff like that here at Hillsdale.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the area, it's really great to go to those and try it out. Or if you're at the college, to try and do, like, we have basic shotgun classes. So there's a lot of entry. I got started in the SCTP if you want to start competing, and to do that and just keep working at it, because if you put your mind to it, you can really accomplish something great, whether that be your end goal or all the steps along the way.
Ava Downs is a junior at Hillsdale College and also a member of the Hillsdale Shotgun Team, 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Scott Jennings. His new book is A Revolution of Common Sense. Also current Hillsdale student Ava Downs. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Ted Bambino, president of the Redding Rodeo. We are thrilled to be partners with the Redding Rancheria. They are an integral part of the success of the Redding Rodeo.
Hi, I'm Julie. This is Debbie. We're here at the Shasta Family YMCA.
Hi, and I'm Kristen, the CEO. And on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for the many years of support for our programs and our projects like the playground.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Introducing Jackpot Blitz, the industry's most advanced digital poker tape designed for players who crave the energy of live play. Seamlessly jump into live multi-table tournaments. Make your moves with just a tap. No dealers, no delays, just pure poker. Hands are dealt instantly and side pots handled automatically. And the pace, whoa, blazing fast. This isn't just the future of poker, it's happening now. Play smarter, play faster, play Jackpot Blitz. For complete details, visit WinRiver.com. And find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Redding and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence. You can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Workers' compensation cases can move really slowly, and it's frustrating. Don't get pressured into hiring the first law firm you meet with just because they were fast to get you on their schedule. Your case impacts every aspect of your life. You want a local attorney that understands that and will get you the best outcome. Interview Patrick Orman of Gorman Law to see if he is the right attorney and to see if you really need an attorney. He will tell you the truth. Call 530-262-2168 or schedule online at GormanComp. Law. Consultations and workers' comp are always free.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality?
At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit SimpsonU.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right, even cooking sometimes.
Cooking sometimes, people, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up, fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Ready to grow your business? KCNR is the last locally owned and operated radio station in our area. We reach thousands of listeners in our community every single day. Our professional production team creates custom ads that grab attention and get the results for your business. And you'll be surprised on how affordable advertising with KCNR is. Our listeners are your customers. Call Sue McClain today at 530-605-4565.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Vaping. Making good homes better. This is the Money Pit. I'm Leslie Segretti, and with me for the last weekend, well, of this version of the Money Pit is Jim Kenzie. You know, we don't know what the future holds for us, and we don't know what the future holds for you guys, but we hope that we will always be able to be a part of it. Right, Jim?
No, Leslie, I'm actually going to go.
No, jerk face.
I had to get my last jerk move in for you, Les.
How dare you? I'm going to miss you a lot. I'm going to miss these sessions. I'm going to miss everybody.
I'm still going to, you know, be stalking you and texting you at 3 in the morning and stuff.
That's fine. I'm up for work. Doesn't matter. I like those texts. Man, just hearing Tom's voice brings back so many memories. And I always go back to the time, I think we worked on this house on Long Island for, I can't remember if it was like Habitat for Humanity. I don't remember what the project was, but what I do remember is we were using a new product at the time that's now been around for far too long. It was sort of a peel and stick tile adhesive. And for some reason, I, like dum-dum, decided to put it on the counter and the counter edge first and then reach over it to put on the backsplash. And I kept gluing myself to the counter, like literally gluing my belt and my waistband to the counter. And Tom would turn around and I'd be like truly stuck there. And he'd be like, again? I'd be like, yeah, what?
We're seeing a pattern develop here, Leslie.
So funny. It's so good to think about all of this again.
It's very surrealistic, Leslie, to be introducing your last word. But I've had the honor of working with you for over 20 years. And I look forward to whatever lies down the road for both of us.
Thanks, Jim. I mean, really, it's so bizarre. I feel like I have grown up with all of you. Certainly, life has changed tremendously over these years. Lots of losses, lots of gains, lots of love. And it's really been an amazing adventure. So before we close out this final hour of the Money Pit, I do want to take a moment to speak from my heart. You know, for 21 years, this show has been a part of my life in a way I never could have imagined when we started. I have spent countless weekends guiding you through projects, celebrating your successes, laughing with you, sometimes talking you guys off of a renovation ledge. And, you know, I've spent all of these years sitting beside someone who made the show what it is, our longtime host, Tom Kreitler. You know, losing Tom this past year was a heartbreak, and I think we're all really still adjusting to it, but his voice, his humor, his steady presence will always be a part of me and definitely a part of this show's legacy. So as this chapter closes, I want to say thank you. I know we all want to say thank you to you, our listeners. You trusted us with your questions, your projects, your homes, and thank you for letting us into your weekends, your routines, your living rooms. I mean, truly, guys, there have been times when I've needed you more than anything. There have been so many changes where sitting behind this mic was weird, when my husband died, when my mom died, when the dog died. I mean, it has been bananas to share these major changes with you guys, but you have been that constant for me, and Tom had been that constant for me. So this has been a big year in a lot of weird ways. So as this chapter closes, we really do want to say thank you. And as you move forward, I hope that you carry with you the spirit that has guided the Money Pit from the start. Take care of your homes. Take pride in your work. Don't be afraid to tackle something new. You are more capable than you all think. And that is very true. And from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say thank you for 21 unforgettable years. I'm Leslie Segretti, and for the last time, this is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. Sorry, get a little choked up here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for learning with us. And thank you for letting us be a small part of your home and your life.
I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Remember, you can do it yourself.
But you don't have to do it alone.
You live in a Money Pit.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand?
In 1 minute. The Brian Kilmeade Show will begin in 30 seconds. Enjoy. Headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Back in action today on January 2nd. Hopefully 26 is off to a great start with you and you enjoyed your holidays. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Cliff May, founder and president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and as well as Ambassador Bill White joins us. He's U.S. Ambassador to Belgium, and we get a perspective on Europe. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls, too, in about a half hour. So 1-866-408-7669. So we have a lot to discuss today. So before we get to the ambassador, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We will draw this city closer together. We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism.
Really? Warmth? Socialist era in New York City has officially begun, I could say again, as Zohran Mamdani becomes Bernie Sanders' first mentee to gain power. My prediction, like Rocky III, pain.
Number two.
I have a great relationship with President Xi, and he hasn't told me anything about it. I certainly have seen it. I don't believe he's going to be doing it. Nothing worries me.
Well, that's talking about what's happening in China, and that is China has just harassed Taiwan and had exercises in and around that island, saying we'll take it by 2027. Enemies line up. China harasses Taiwan and protests in Iran now in its seventh day. As the president says, do not kill these protesters. We know that's how you do it.
Number one.
And I love President Trump's attitude about the economy, but people are concerned about it. And so rather than saying you're wrong, we have to say you're right. The affordability is an issue. And here are the things we're going to do about it.
And there it is, the extremely successful Marcos Lemonis weighing in on Fox Business, ready to go in 26. The Trump team primes the economic pump for the new year. Tariff relief, tax refunds, and health care having to be addressed. What do you expect to get done? Your opinion's the right opinion, so I just want to hear from you. Now let's bring in Ambassador Bill White, the U.S. Ambassador, over to Belgium. Ambassador, how are things going by you?
Oh, my God, Brian, great to be with you. It's, I don't know, I think we've been doing this together for over 20 years.
First time you're being in Belgium.
Yes, that's right. It's an incredible experience. We'd love to have you come over and do a show here about the incredible opportunity we had a couple of weeks ago to visit Baskonia, which was the Battle of the Bulge site, and we had 10 U.S. veterans, you know, the guys I used to bring on the show with you from the Intrepid, and the youngest guy was 100 years old, Brian. And he was here talking to the young members of the 101st. There were about 5,000 people that showed up and paid tribute to these great American veterans. And it's a bond that brings America and Belgium so close as friends for all those years. Right on that battlefield is a spiritual experience, really, to be there. And it's tied our nations economically, culturally, historically, politically. We now have a government here, Brian. Bart De Wever is the prime minister. He was the mayor of Antwerp for 20 years. And he is as aligned as we could get of a European country with President Trump and our administration to bring us safer, stronger, more prosperous policies. And he gets the whole free, fair, reciprocal trade aspect because Belgium actually, we have a trade surplus with Belgium. We have a $150 billion trade relation with Belgium. So we're doing really well. And I have some good news to announce. I haven't said this on any show, but I'll say it to you. We've talked about this over the years with our business relationships, is that I am about ready to secure almost $50 billion in deals for the United States from Belgium. These are companies that want to open up in New York and Georgia and West Virginia. The investment from Belgium is significant because these are the real entrepreneurs of Europe. They want to do business in the United States. They like President Trump's policies. You know, they wish they didn't have to pay the tariffs. Belgium actually has a trade surplus with us. So, you know, if they were not part of the EU, they wouldn't be paying any tariffs. So all that's been rebalanced and focused, and they've baked that into their pricing, and they want to invest in America.
So now the big question with Belgium, of course, the EU and the U.S. have a more favorable deal for the U.S. than it has been in the past, but the tilt has been heavily with the EU. The president say they're a competitive economic, you know, somebody we have to deal with competitively, even though we're allies. When it comes to Belgium, we think about all the money that they have in from Russians, who they basically have frozen in their accounts. Your thoughts about Belgium's reluctance to turn over some of that money over to Ukraine. They're worried about the banking system in general, where people can't feel secure about their deposits, even though Russia is obviously the aggressor in Europe and threatens peace in the region. Do you understand both sides?
Yeah, no, it's very, very interesting. It is the center of where assets were frozen, you know, in that nanosecond of how sovereign wealth money flows through, central bank money flows through this operation here called Euroclear. Euroclear actually closes on $45 trillion worth of business a year. They do a combined global GDP every month through their systems. So if the money was to be taken out of Euroclear, it would have catastrophic consequences for Belgium. They estimated that Belgium could go bankrupt if there was liability to the nation of Belgium. So this other proposal...
Wait, just for somebody like me who doesn't have the international banking experience that you have. So it's Russian money that got frozen, right? They've frozen banks. And the question is, can you pull that out if it's Russian money? Right. And if that money is pulled out, you worry about the Belgium worry about Russian lawsuits that could destroy them? Is that what they're worried about, Russian legal action?
Yes, yes. And also other sovereign nations have expressed grave concern. We have bankers like Jamie Dimon, Christine Lagarde, who runs the European Bank. She's declined to support this proposal. Giorgia Meloni has written a proposal not to support this. But there is a better proposal on the books right now, Brian, and that is to take the headroom of the European Union's budget. This is money they have in case of emergency, you know, break glass in case of an emergency. And they've agreed as a European Union to spend that money on supporting Ukraine. The other piece to this, too, Brian, is President Trump and Steve Witkoff. You couldn't have two better deal makers working on this deal right now to bring an end to this horrible war. President Trump has solved at least seven of these global wars. The most difficult one, as he said, is this one. He wants the killing to stop. And to not have that $212 billion in sovereign Russian assets here and in basically the West control for President Trump to use in these negotiations, I think, is a big mistake. He's actually voiced that. Steve Witkoff has told me that would be very dangerous. And I believe this is a better pathway forward, because this gives President Trump another tool in the toolbox to bring these two to the table for peace.
So, in other words, just leave the money alone, knowing that there's really two aggressive powers in the world, three, Iran, Russia, and China. And Russia obviously showing that they have not worried about any ramifications. They said that sanctions don't affect them. This got their attention, though. So do you think that for people who say, well, if you freeze Russian funds, that's not going to be a precedent for anything, because you're not going to do it to France or others. They're not going to be invading other countries.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And the school of thought is that Japan has about $30 billion of sovereign Russian assets. They are following the same policy that Belgium is. During World War II, you know, we historically seized Emperor Hirohito's money, Japan's money. We actually seized Adolf Hitler's money from Germany, and we did not take that money and use it for our own devices. So I think this would set a pretty cataclysmic precedence of how sovereign wealth funds are moved around the world every day safely and securely. And the better proposition is to have that money sitting there for President Trump so he can use it in the negotiations to resolve this war. And also that consequences for Belgium would be catastrophic. So we have to respect that. You know, Belgium is a great ally of ours. They are doing all of the right things. They're up their NATO spending to 5%. We have incredible trade relationship with Belgium. Our ties, because of our veterans' support here in Belgium, saving Belgium twice, World War I, World War II, is a very sacred thing. So it's good to listen to the Belgians when they're saying they're concerned about this, because they are doing everything else we ask them to do, and then some.
So do you think anti-Semitism is a problem there like it is in so many other places in Europe?
Yes, it is. I actually just met with several rabbis who were very concerned after the incident in Australia. I went to one of the major temples here, Brian. These are wonderful, sweet, amazing people and families. I met over 200 of them at a Shabbat dinner that evening. Brian and I, my husband, went and visited them. We went to the temple. We lit one of the last nights of the candle for Hanukkah together. And I'm going to Antwerp over the next couple of weeks to visit with all of the rabbis and community leaders in Belgium. We have several problems here with the rise of anti-Semitism. It's the focus of the government, so we're working together with them. But we want to go speak to the Jewish community here in Antwerp and make sure that they know that President Trump and Secretary Rubio care about them, and that America cares about them, and that we will not tolerate anti-Semitism.
If you're not watching, you see the stream, but Ambassador Bill White joins us. He's a U.S. Ambassador to Belgium. Ambassador, there's a sense, if you listen to the German leader, that the U.S. is changing its relationship with Europe, and maybe it's overdue. I think so. Where that for the longest time since World War II, we have been their defense. And that very few were spending even 2% when it came to NATO or others in Europe on their own defense. And Spain still won't commit to doing that. But they're trying to get the message to Japan and Germany, and I think Japan gets it, that, guys, you got to start picking up the pace with your own defense. We can't watch your back. Whether Russia's aggression, an aggressive period or not, you know, us being your defense, we would love to spend less money on defense and put it into different programs, but it's not possible. Do you understand that are the Europeans taking it in the right way, or some of them feel as though we're letting them down by changing this relationship?
Yeah, I think there's an incorrect appreciation of what President Trump is saying. He loves Europe. He cares about Europe. He wants them to be successful. You know, their GDP was equal to ours about 10 years ago. We were around a $30 trillion economy. And today, Europe's GDP is down 50%, Brian, from 10 years ago. Germany, which was the industrialized nation in all of Europe, has a GDP less than West Virginia. And West Virginia, by the way, is Belgium's second largest trading partner. So these are significant numbers, and they also beg the question on why is GDP down? And this is because of woke policies, compliance, regulation, rules. This is something our ambassador to the EU, Andy Puzder, is working on successfully to try to reduce the regulations regarding NATO. Matt Whitaker, our mutual great friend and buddy of ours, has done a great job getting all the NATO countries up to 5% with President Trump's goal of that. Belgium is rising to the occasion. They just announced another $1.5 billion for 11 new F-35s here in Belgium. So yes, they understand that shared burden sharing is very important. They also understand that our focus in Asia is something that we have to deal with as a country. These are the priorities that the president just specified in the national security policy. And Europe understands that they have to take more of a responsibility for defending Europe. And I think President Trump, the greatest supporter of NATO, he's helped to raise, will be trillions of dollars at the end of the day that he has raised for NATO's defense of Europe.
So lastly, real quick, how much does Europe's economic slump have to do with their obsession with failed green technologies and an overreaction to global warming?
Well, you hit it right on the head, Brian. You should be ambassador over here coming up next, because you understand these issues. I say that as a compliment more than a lot of the folks in the media look at these issues. And Europe understands now that these policies have been failed. It's tough for them to swallow the pill and admit it, but they are working on changing some of these laws. And the rise of political powers in all of these great countries are bringing new, fresh blood to the EU, which I think will be helpful to get a lot of these. They call it simplification, Brian. This is what we call deregulation. They have to get rid of a lot of these policies so that businesses can flourish again in Europe and so that Americans can come and do business as well. A lot of companies I know have pulled out of doing business in Europe because of regulation and compliance and the cost of ESG. You know about this policy, ESG, the environmental social government policy, and a lot of the woke policies. Those have been pretty much revoked, but there's still some lingering, and that drives business away from Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. They got to go back to nuclear overreaction of what happened in Japan. Ambassador, stay safe. We're lucky to have you over there. Ambassador Bill White, he's now with Belgium, but he's very much has a foot in America. Ambassador, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Brian, thanks so much. Happy New Year. And you please come visit. We'd love to do the show here local and live from Bastogne with our veterans next year.
Oh, that'll be great. Thanks so much, Ambassador. I appreciate it. All right. When we come back, we'll take a short time out and come back and I'll update you on what else has been happening around the country and around the globe. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Billy, your gas light's on. We need to stop and fill up.
No way, Jen. Gas around here is too expensive. We can make it a little further.
Billy, listen to your big sister. You don't need to drive all over searching for the lowest gas prices. Do what I do and use Upside.
Upside?
Do you live under a rock, Billy? Upside is the hottest cashback app out there. It's free to download, and you get real cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I use it all the time, and I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying the gas you have to buy anyway?
Yes, I'm looking at the Upside app now, and you can get up to a $5 cashback bonus on your first tank.
Okay, I'm stopping to download Upside and fill up my tank.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime, right to your bank, to PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. That's code RAIN5 for up to a $5 cash back bonus.
At Audion Hearing, our mission is simple, to make better hearing affordable for everyone. We're proud to offer high-quality, rechargeable hearing aids starting at just $98. Clear, comfortable, and ready to use right out of the box. And here's a study worth hearing. Research shows that wearing hearing aids can reduce your risk of dementia by up to 61%. Join over 1 million happy customers and hear the difference today by going to audionhearing.com. That's audienhearing.com.
Hey, I'm Mike Slater. My dad passed away at the age of 63. It's out of nowhere. Had a stroke. Super hard, obviously, for the whole family, but my dad had life insurance. This is why I have life insurance for my family, for my wife and four kids. And the best place to get life insurance is ethos.com, because you can do it in 10 minutes. And there's no medical exam and no blood test, just a few health questions. Get life insurance in 10 minutes so your family is protected. Ethos, E-T-H-O-S. ethos.com/Mike.
Fox on Faith with Lauren Green.
The Bible promises that God is close to the brokenhearted, that he saves those who are crushed in spirit. So why is there so much pain and suffering in the world? Well, many say it is because churches need to minister more to the souls sitting in the pews. Author and evangelist Nick Vujicic.
A lot of us are not really having an honest audit check, an inventory of even just the brokenhearted within the four walls of the church, let alone trying to save the lost.
For 20 years, Vujicic has ministered to those in pain, knowing what it feels like to be angry with God over life circumstances. Born with no arms or legs, he almost committed suicide as a child, but the grace of God intervened. His book, Champions for the Brokenhearted, shows how to have faith in God's purpose and plan.
That's the epiphany, the revelation of realizing, I don't need to know the plan, I just need to believe that he has one.
For Fox on Faith, Lauren Green, Fox News.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
After a Soviet arms buildup in Cuba, President John Kennedy addressed the American people with the world on the brink.
This sudden, clandestine decision to station strategic weapons for the first time outside of Soviet soil is a deliberately provocative and unjustified change in the status quo, which cannot be accepted by this country if our courage and our commitments are ever to be trusted again by either friend or foe. The 1930s taught us a clear lesson. Aggressive conduct, if allowed to go unchecked and unchallenged, ultimately leads to war. This nation is opposed to war. We are also true to our word. Our unswerving objective, therefore, must be to prevent the use of these missiles against this or any other country, and to secure their withdrawal or elimination from the Western Hemisphere.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
I'm Ashley DeBorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile with Sarah Snook, who leads Peacock's All Her Fault, about a mother searching for her missing son and the mysterious circumstances which unfold from there. Snook spoke about how being a mom added to her perspective on the role.
Yeah, I was only able to draw on that for my own experiences, or my, I've never lost her at all, but the imagination, the world building of that, what it would be like to have the worst thing happen.
Previously starring as Shiv Roy on Succession, she shared what she was looking for in projects following the hit series.
I've been really kind of conscious about putting Succession in a different box. Like, it's not a thing that can ever be topped or compared with, or that was such an amazing experience that was career changing.
And you're also an EP on this for the first time. So what is sort of a takeaway that you can bring to whatever project you do next?
When you're an EP on every project is a different way of inhabiting that role. For me, what was really important was setting a culture on set and to have a kind of everyone's welcome equality.
Ashley DeBorkin, Fox News.
Radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And I love President Trump's attitude about the economy, but people are concerned about it. And so rather than saying you're wrong and the Democrats have done a nice job and we need to correct ourselves pretty quickly, we have to say you're right. The affordability is an issue. And here are the things we're going to do about it. And here are the things that you can do about it. So saying that, you know, it doesn't seem right is, I think, probably the thing that's causing Americans to be most frustrated.
Right. So I think that Marcus Lemonis, as you know, from The Prophet, and he now has a series on Fox, which the network as well as here. He is a self-made multimillionaire. He does Campers World, got so many businesses across the country, just bought Bed Bath & Beyond. So he's in the real economy. So when you talk about tariffs and impact, you don't have to tell him, give me the charts. He said, well, I'll tell you exactly what's going on, where my profit margin is. So I love that the president marched back. He pushed back on tariffs. It doesn't mean tariffs, in my view, are failing. You know what it means? It means what the goal is to bring manufacturing back here, like, for example, furniture, kitchen cabinets, vanities, and things like that. But until that happens, we have to bring it in from outside. So we bring it in from outside, tariffs hit, and then you go to the store to buy them, or you order them on Amazon, or whatever you do, go to Home Depot, let's say. And you go, whoa, what's going on? Hey, don't blame Home Depot. That's the tariffs. Why? Because it's not able to bring manufacturing back by snapping your fingers. Where autos, they really do it. They can do it relatively quickly. But when it comes to fruit and things to that nature and coffee. We don't make a lot of coffee here. But now that they know the tariffs are coming, they now will be a profitable business in a year. The whole thing, for example, with marijuana. Not for it, ever, nor will I ever be for it. Maybe I'm the last one. But now that they know that marijuana is going to be legal here and they think it's changing a different schedule now, then people say, the money's not there yet, but it's about to be. So what the president did is a one-year delay on planned tariff increases on upholstered furniture, kitchen cabinets, keeping rates at about 25% while officials continue negotiating with trade partners. You know what I also think is going to happen? I think the USMCA is going to be redone, and I imagine if we could put egos aside, we'll get a deal done with India. That will certainly help, in my view. So we'll see. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Cliff May. I'm going to talk about some of the challenges in Iran, which is with the 6 days of unrest, what China did around Taiwan, and we're going to talk about Venezuela, and believe it or not, the latest on Ukraine and Russia.
On top of the latest forecast with America's Weather Team in the palm of your hands.
Here's the latest from America's Weather Center.
It's Fox Weather updates throughout your busy day, every day.
That heat's going to be out there for one more day.
Temperatures being 30 degrees above average.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com. Connect to Fox News Audio and the Fox News app. Listen to hear your favorite hosts like Brian Kilmeade, Jimmy Failla, and Guy Benson standing up for what's right, live and via podcast. Just click listen, then swipe right and hear the latest news updates on your time. And scroll down to hear the latest podcasts from Fox News. And it's even easier to listen in the car with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Get programming alerts and notifications. Fox News Audio is on the Fox News app, the voices America trusts. Download it now.
This is House Call for Health. If you're having trouble sleeping, you might consider turning to the age-old practice of Tai Chi for some relief. Tai Chi is a traditional Chinese mind-body exercise that involves slow, flowing movements, deep breathing, and focused attention. Researchers at Hong Kong University conducted a study of 200 Chinese adults ages 50 years and older who'd been diagnosed with chronic insomnia. The study found after 15 months, participants who used Tai Chi regularly had fewer problems falling asleep. Other research has also shown long-term use of Tai Chi improves sleep quality, increases total sleep time, and reduces the amount of time it takes to get to sleep. Unrelated to those studies, the CDC suggests creating a good sleep environment. Make your bedroom dark by using room darkening shades or heavy draperies, and also keep the room quiet, cool, and comfortable. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
You never know who might be taking the quiz.
Hi, everyone. It's Candace Cameron Bure.
Hey, everyone. It's Phil Sims.
It's Dolores Catania.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kix Brooks.
It's Candace Bushnell.
I'm Rob Paulson.
I'm Ryan Serhant.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nicole Palizzi.
Hey, everybody. It's Kevin Nealon.
What's up, guys? It's Nia Sue, and it's time to take the quiz.
Five questions in less than 5 minutes every day. Listen and follow at thequiz.fox.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1994. Senator Ted Kennedy.
Jackie would have preferred to be just herself, but the world insisted that she be a legend, too.
Police in Anaheim say they are following a white Ford Bronco. In that is O.J. Simpson with a gun to his head.
You guys have got to be strong because you are, which I just know, I just feel in my heart that you're okay, but you got to take care of each other.
Susan Smith has been arrested.
and will be charged with two counts of murder in connection with the deaths of her children.
It's not a Republican victory. It's not a Democratic victory. It is the American people making a set of choices.
If you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green, he's back. Please.
Okay, what does he look like?
He's O.J. Simpson. I think you know his record.
News as it happened then.
News as it happens now.
This is Fox News Talk.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. Even though December is the month you might be spending more dough than usual for holiday gifts, the month also provides some great deals that include end-of-year sales at big-box retailers that feature price cuts on major appliances, both big and small. If you're looking for some beauty and fragrance items, many retailers sell discounted sets of makeup, perfume, hair, and skincare products. You can buy gifts for others and at the same time stock up on your favorite beauty and fragrance brands at discount prices. And if you want to treat yourself to a dinner out while doing your holiday shopping or need to pick up a last-minute gift, many restaurants and retailers offer deals on gift cards in December. After Christmas, you can find significant discounts on holiday-specific items and remaining seasonal inventory. While shopping, don't overlook opportunities to stack deals by combining store coupons, cashback offers, and clearance pricing to score some great savings. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We are back. In about 15 minutes, I'll be able to take some calls, whatever's on your mind. I want to see what you expect on the economy. I gave you the numbers, but I want to know how you feel and what you predict for this year, and we'll get to that. But there are so many critical things going on around the globe. I mean, you could always dig stuff out and say this is critical, but you don't have to read Foreign Policy magazine to see it. I mean, just walk by the headlines anywhere. See what happened in Taiwan we pledge $11 billion in China. Basically has war exercises over that island and pledges to take it in 27. Then in Venezuela, Maduro does what I think is carpool karaoke in a car, does an interview where he says America could have what they want. If they want oil, if they want to stop the drug problem, I want to work with you. You want political prisoners out, you can do it. And then we see Russia and Ukraine. We see a delegate from the Russian side and Ukrainian's president come in, as well as the prime minister of Israel over Mar-a-Lago. Please don't tell me that this president is losing steam. Not going to work. Let's bring in Cliff Bay, founder and president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Cliff, thanks so much for joining us. First off, when it comes to Iran, six straight days of protests. We've seen this movie before. I give these people so much credit because they don't have guns, they don't have weapons, but they have numbers now. Is this going to be different this time than the last times when the Iranian regime just cracks down?
Good point. All those are good points, Brian. Look, when we saw this in 1979, and I was there as a young reporter in 1979, the Shah was not going to kill like 10,000 of his people in order to stay in power. Now, the present regime in Iran, will they kill 10,000 people to stay in power? I think that's perfectly conceivable that they might. The numbers of people in the streets are huge, and it's mounting. At some point, if this is to succeed, I think what you have to have are some of those who have the guns, the military, the IRGC, which is separate from the military, the besieged, kind of like brown shirts. They have to do two things, which they've started to do the first. One is say, we're not going to fire on our brothers. We're not going to do it. Two, they have to say, we're going to support our brothers. In other words, they have to switch sides and stand with people. If they don't, look, usually those with the guns are the ones who end up in power.
Tell me if this is different. They're running out of water. When it comes to inflation, $1 equals 1.4 million reals. So inflation is through the roof. I mean, it's up 46%. So now they find out that $1 to $2 billion is going to Hezbollah since the ceasefire. And what is it, $25 million to $50 million going to Hamas since the fighting stopped there? I mean, all this stuff adds up to maybe putting the whole population over the top.
The population's over the top for good, very likely for a good reason. They have been ruled since 1979 by Islamists who are incompetent, who are oppressive, who have made the country poorer and less free. That's not what they hoped for back in 1979. Again, I remember they hoped for a free country back then. It didn't happen. So that's very important. But again, Brian, I would just say guns are consequential.
True. So the president put out on Truth Social. If Iran shoots and violently kills peaceful protesters, which is their custom, the United States of America will come to their rescue. Wow. We're locked and loaded, ready to go. Ali Larijani, the former parliament speaker, said this: Trump should know that intervention by the U.S. in the domestic problem corresponds to chaos in the entire region and the destruction of the U.S. interests. Larijani wrote that on X. He said the people of the United States should know that Trump began the adventurism. They should take care of their own soldiers.
Trump didn't begin the adventurism, and we now know that those people, Larijani, or frankly people like Tucker Carlson, have said, if we do anything to the Iranians, it's going to mean a world war. No, it didn't. What happened was a 12-day war. Israel, for 11 days, fought it successfully, cleared the way for B-2 bombers. Fordo was taken out. Nuclear weapons facilities were set back, if not obliterated. All that worked out very well. Could you have something like that again? You bet you could. Israeli intelligence in Iran is very good. If you wanted to destroy this leadership, I think it's actually very possible to do. Now, what President Trump will do, I don't know. No president has ever been on the side of the Iranian people during protests before, like President Trump is now. You remember in 2009, during the Green Movement, what Obama did nothing. The people in the streets were yelling, Obama, are you with us or with the dictators? And he said nothing because he was with the dictators because he wanted his Iran deal. Remember that, the JCPOA. So who knows what this unpredictable president will do, but he has a lot of cards he could play.
So I asked that to General Jack Keane on Fox and Friends, and a few hours ago, here's what he said, cut 17. Yeah.
The backdrop for this is when the 12-day war ended, and the Iranians were really shook by that, particularly by the fact on the first shots that were fired killed all their senior military generals. I'm not talking about some of them. I'm talking about all of them. As we know, the senior nuclear scientists as well. They did not kill any of the civilian leaders. Let's make the assumption they knew where the civilian leaders were as well as they knew where the military leaders were. That rocked this regime. After the war ended, and they were weakened militarily for sure, and certainly more economically, they knew full well they were weakened politically inside of Iran as well as outside of Iran. And what did they do? They arrested 21,000 Iranians on the desperate hope that they were trying to put away in jail the informants. I think they were also trying to intimidate the population, and they feared reprisals because they're so weakened.
Your thoughts?
Jack is exactly right, as he usually is. He's saying what I'm saying, that Trump has these cards to play. He has the Israelis he can utilize who have a lot of knowledge and a lot of abilities as well. But Jack's saying is right. He's saying it better than I did, and he's extending it further. This regime has to know that it's in danger if Trump decides he's not going to let them kill protesters. About four protesters have probably been killed by now. I think that's the best estimate I've seen.
And a 37-year-old last night, and they arrested two dozen women, who are standing up for having some type of semblance of life. The thing about the Iranian population, I understand, is they're so well educated. This is a well-educated population, and they know what their life could be. They know what it should be. And can I just bring you back to 79 for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Is it true that they thought the Ayatollah Khomeini was going to be a moderate leader and bring freedom? Was he really mischaracterized that thoroughly?
Brian, he was mischaracterized that thoroughly, not only in Iran, but in the New York Times. He was mischaracterized by American diplomats. I can show you things that Andrew Young said. I can show you things that others said. They all thought that he was going to be a spiritual leader who would retire to the holy city of Qom and provide guidance. I remember there were people in the Communist Party. There were liberals and social democrats, some of which had gone to the University of Texas at Austin, who said, "You don't understand, Cliff. He values all of us. He values the students, the bizarres, the secularists, all of us. This is a revolution for all of us." He turned on them and killed thousands afterwards. All that happened after the revolution in the months that came. Women had to cover up in chadors. I remember going skiing outside Tehran and seeing women skiing in chadors. And people got frustrated. And that's why in the fall the American embassy was taken. The idea was to revive the spirit of the revolution, which was in a malaise at that point. But yes, everybody thought that way, and the American press thought that way too.
Yeah, and by the way, France, where Khomeini was, and then he was allowed to come back, they said positive things about him. Thought he was going to be a great guy, a great leader. Right?
100%. That's 100%. They thought they'd have great relations with him. They had treated him so well when he was in France. That's exactly how it was seen, yes. And by the way, there was no need to think that, because Khomeini had been writing exactly what he wanted to do for years. All you had to do was read what he had been writing. And a few people, Bernard Lewis, the great historian of Islam and the Middle East, he read it. But it appears our diplomats were not reading it.
So this is intriguing, because I know you guys write about this all the time. Imagine if we had a leader get aggressive in this area and see what could happen. Understand that some people say, hey, we were burned in Iraq, we should keep our hands off everything, like some people you mentioned already. Let's talk about Venezuela, which must be really killing the podcasters, because the president said, I've had it with our hemisphere being infiltrated by China, Russia, Hezbollah, everybody, Iran. And he's taken action, steady action against Venezuela, turning the screws. It looks like Nicolas Maduro, who, you got to picture this, he's in a car doing an interview. I think he's driving. And here's what he said through a translator. Cut 10.
The U.S. government knows, because we've told many of their spokespeople, that if they want to seriously discuss an agreement to combat drug trafficking, we're ready. If they want oil, Venezuela is ready for U.S. investment, like with Chevron. Whenever they want it, wherever they want it, and however they want it.
Read between the lines. Maduro's trying to preserve his position there, and he should understand the only thing he can do while he can do it is you know, go shopping for a cul-de-sac on the block of Assad and Eric Snowden, go to Moscow, go to Turkey might be an option. What do you think's the likely scenario here?
Well, if the pressure keeps up, maybe Maduro does leave. He's being advised not to leave by the Cubans who are there, by the Iranians, by the Chinese, by the Russians. One of his generals, maybe the CIA, has their cell phone number and is saying, look, we'll be good with you. If you want to take over, do so. I don't know that Maduro has made up his mind what he's going to do. He's an illegitimate leader. He lost an election. About 8 million of his people have had to flee the country, which is a burden elsewhere. And as you know, the national security strategy that Trump published last, in November, no, December came out, said very clearly, we're going to focus on Latin America in a way that we have not, that no administration has done in the past. And we're sick, as you said, of Chinese influence, Iranian influence, Hezbollah running roughshod over the continent. This is a priority for the president. And we'll see how hard he pushes. Maduro is trying to figure out, can I make a deal? This president likes to make deals. I'm not sure the president wants to make a deal with
Maduro. But Cliff, the danger is that if he withstands America pressure, he comes out stronger. And you're never going to dislodge him.
I think if he withstands American pressure, I think he wins and President Trump loses. I don't think I can't see how to argue against that.
And I don't think he wants to lose. By the way, Russia's asking the U.S. to stop pursuing the third oil tanker because they might have reflagged it overnight. Should we honor that request?
I don't think so. No. I think not only should we be putting pressure on Maduro, we should be putting pressure on Putin. Putin just lied to Trump's face. He said, you know, President Trump, Zelensky sent drones to try to kill me in my residence. There is not a, not only is there no evidence that's the case, but the CIA has said it's not the case. Everybody has said that's not the case. Jack Keane's think tank has said we've looked at it. It's not the case. This was a lie. It's one thing for Putin to tag the president along. It's another thing to lie to his face. By the way, Putin has tried to assassinate Zelensky. Putin every day kills civilians on purpose. The Ukrainians do not kill civilians. They only target, they target military, they use military targets they're after. They're trying to survive. And I think they deserve to survive.
So China, over the last few days, in response to us selling $11 billion worth of military equipment, missile systems, naval platforms, radar upgrades, they have basically had severe war games over Taiwan. So the, what maybe like we had not have seen before, they displayed the, they also have been aggressively going back at Japan, who's got a new prime minister that's been aggressive with China, and we've shown support for Japan by flying B-2s over their country. Your thoughts about what China's up to, because in the New Year's address, President Xi said by 27 we're going to take Taiwan back.
Yeah, we know exactly what Xi Jinping's up to because he's written what he's up to. He said what he's up to in Mandarin, and that's been read and published by people like Matt Bottinger, who was the China specialist on the National Security Council under H.R. McMaster. He's now affiliated with my think tank. First of all, he wants to swallow Taiwan, which is free, independent, prosperous, democratic. He can't stand any of that. After that, he wants to begin to intimidate Japan, the Philippines, become the hegemon of Asia. But beyond that, he wants to displace America as the world's preeminent power, as the great global power. He wants a new international system where he makes the rules in association with Putin and with Tehran and with North Korea, by the way, and lessers like Maduro. That's his goal. It's a grand ambition.
Does he do it while Trump's in office?
And that's a good question.
I love that Trump's made this sale. $11 billion really got their attention.
Yes. What's the idea behind that? Well, is to make Taiwan into what's called an iron porcupine, very hard for a predator to swallow. Although there are other ways China can do it, and we've seen that in this testing phase. Blockades keep energy supplies out of the country, cyber warfare, all kinds of other things. But when you talk, you mentioned 2027. Well, you know, the President Trump is still in office. Now, there's a possibility that he could say, okay, I'm young enough, I'm healthy enough, I'll wait till President Trump's out of office. Similarly, Putin could say, I'll take a deal that allows me to jab real hard and I'll wait for the, against Ukraine, I'll wait for the right hook after Trump's out of office. All these guys are thinking about that. They all want to challenge American power, American greatness, American primacy.
All right, Cliff, we covered the world. I don't know if we could solve all the problems, but at least we can present them any over options. Cliff May, thanks so much.
Great to be with you, Brian. Thanks.
Great. And, man, we have a lot of challenges straight ahead, but all of them coming up now. It doesn't look like they can be avoided. All of them need to be addressed, and the president knows it. Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Billy, your gas light's on. We need to stop and fill up.
No way, Jen. Gas around here is too expensive. We can make it a little further.
Billy, listen to your big sister. You don't need to drive all over searching for the lowest gas prices. Do what I do and use Upside.
Upside?
Do you live under a rock, Billy? Upside is the hottest cash back app out there. It's free to download, and you get real cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I use it all the time, and I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying the gas you have to buy anyway?
Yes. I'm looking at the Upside app now, and you can get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank.
Okay, I'm stopping to download Upside and fill up my tank.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime, right to your bank, to PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. That's code RAIN5 for up to a $5 cash back bonus.
I'm Ed Evans, CEO of Consumer Cellular. Maybe you haven't heard about us. We're not one of the big guys. Truth is, we don't want to be. If you're over 50, Big Wireless has you paying for more data than you might need. Why? They might want you to cover the cost of younger people who do use all that data. If you're not using the data, you're probably being used. We've heard time and time again that some Big Wireless customers get stuck paying hundreds and even thousands more for years and years because they think it's hard to switch. Not with us. It takes just about 20 minutes, and you can change your plan anytime without extra charges. We use the same towers as the big guys, so you'll get the same fast nationwide coverage without the big wireless bill.
Our plans start at just $20 a month. And for a limited time, switch and get your second month free. Call 1-888-FREEDOM, visit ConsumerCellular.com, or a store near you and get your second month free today. Plans include $5 credit for auto pay and e-billing. See site for additional details.
I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute. A New Hampshire cold case murder solved half a century after the crime. The person responsible, the prime suspect all along, who walked free because of a botched FBI report. 22-year-old Judith Lord was found dead inside her Concord apartment May 20th, 1975, months after moving in with her husband and baby. A building manager found her dead in a bed upstairs, her infant son alive in his crib in the next room. An autopsy showed Lord died of homicidal strangulation. She had also been sexually assaulted after clearing her husband, who had recently moved out after assaulting her. Investigators eyed Lord's neighbor, Ernest Theodore Gable, who was 24 at the time. But a flawed FBI hair analysis incorrectly excluded Gable as a suspect, even though his fingerprints were found at the scene and witnesses said Lord feared him. Gable was never charged and died in 1987. He was stabbed in Los Angeles. The attorney general said if he were still alive, he'd be facing a first-degree murder charge. There's more on this story at foxnews.com or subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast. I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute.
Fox on 10.
The Senate Agriculture Committee on Capitol Hill releasing the long-awaited and bipartisan discussion draft for cryptocurrencies. The efforts led by Chair John Boozman, the Republican senator from Arkansas, and ranking member Cory Booker, the Democrat senator from New Jersey, and would mark major progress toward a comprehensive crypto market structure framework that lawmakers say would make the market safer for the average investor to buy and sell crypto. The draft bill is notable in that it focuses on giving the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, the power to regulate digital asset commodities like Bitcoin, and partially shifting cryptocurrency oversight away from the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC. Senator Booker sent us a statement saying these are steps to protect consumers. While adding in part, this discussion draft is a first step, and we still have significant work to do before advancing the legislation out of committee and eventually to the Senate floor. With Fox on Tech, Darren Botello, Fox Business.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we are back, everybody. Just a quick notes. We know about what happened yesterday as Ole Miss comes back and beats Georgia again in the last minute. They came back. I think they were trailing by two touchdowns at one point. But here's the crazy thing. You know Lane Kiffin, not to be the biggest sports fan in those stories. He leaves. Lane Kiffin comes back. At one point, he was like a 34-year-old Raider coach. He's a really good coach. Coaching Ole Miss brings him to the playoffs. They become a national figure. They're now in the semifinals. Do you know that he left Ole Miss to take an LSU job? Now, he would crush LSU this year, but long-term is considered one of the better jobs because you're going to get full support, but all the pressure. Do you know they structure Lane Kiffin's contract that he receives wins, he receives money for every win that Ole Miss has? Now, he offered to coach through the playoffs, but they go, why would I let you coach through the playoffs? You already decided that you're going to leave for LSU. You're not going to recruit players off the Ole Miss roster and bring them to LSU for more money. So he's getting money for playoff wins. For example, when Ole Miss won in the first round, he got $150,000. By winning last night against Georgia, another $250,000. If they advance to the quarterfinals, I should say, if they advance to the semifinals, another $500,000. Then $750,000 to win it. This guy could get, I mean, I've never seen somebody so lucky for doing something I think it shows a total lack of ethics. You could never, ever criticize a player for doing what they're doing. When you have a hot coach like Lane Kiffin leave what he did, they should easily make this rule in football. You cannot entertain any offers in season, just like the NFL. Coaches need special permission to interview for head coaching jobs if your team's in the playoffs or during the season. They should have the same policy when it comes to that. And don't expect players to have loyalty if coaches don't. They should sit out a year.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could it be lower testosterone?
Lower T.
Happens to most guys after 40.
I was in the same boat until I started using Nugenix Total T2. Total T2, the new one I've seen on TV.
Yep, it's the next generation testosterone booster for both free and total testosterone. It's packed with even more man-boosting power, sending nitric oxide levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours.
It actually works?
I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I've got more energy, better results in the gym, and things are even better in the bedroom. Send them a text and get a complimentary bottle.
Text now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one testosterone brand at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, absolutely free. Text SAVVY to 369-369. That's SAVVY to 369-369. SAVVY to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
As legend has it, Abner Doubleday invented a little game called baseball in Cooperstown, New York in the year 1839. Myth or truth, no one knows for sure. But 100 years later, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum opened in Cooperstown and has done a great job of balancing the myth with the historical record.
Ladies and gentlemen, I now declare the National Baseball Museum and the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, the birthplace of baseball, open. May it forever stand as a symbol of clean play and good sportsmanship.
The first class in 1939 included Cy Young of the Red Sox, Phillies legend Connie Mack, Honus Wagner of the Pirates, and the Yankees' Babe Ruth.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Breaking news in Washington from Town Hall, I'm Bernie Bennett. President Trump and U.S. officials have outlined some of the details of the U.S. military strikes against Venezuela that led to the capture of Nicolas Maduro.
The chairman of the Joint Chiefs says U.S. forces had practiced the maneuvers for months. General Dan Kane also says his forces got the go-ahead from President Trump late Friday. Meanwhile, President Trump says Maduro was highly guarded in the presidential palace but failed to close the door to a safe room. Mr. Trump also says U.S. forces armed themselves with massive blowtorches.
That's Washington correspondent Andrew Stewart. Those blowtorches could be used to cut through steel walls if Maduro had locked himself in. President Trump says the U.S. will partner with Venezuela to revive the U.S. productivity of oil capacity, benefiting both countries.
This partnership of Venezuela with the United States of America, a country that everybody wants to be involved with because of what we were able to do and accomplish, will make the people of Venezuela rich, independent, and safe.
The president says that working with Venezuela will help increase productivity. He said the world could notice that the U.S. has captured and removed Venezuela's president. This is White House correspondent Greg Cluxton.
Following the military operation, the president said the U.S. is going to control Venezuela during the transition and said other countries should learn a lesson.
This extremely successful operation should serve as warning to anyone who would threaten American sovereignty or endanger American lives.
Nicolas Maduro and his wife were taken from their home on a military base in the Venezuelan capital and are set to face criminal charges in the United States. Greg Clugston, Washington.
News and analysis at townhall.com.
Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder, launching a new project, or just looking for that extra edge, your brain is your most valuable asset. Now there's a way to support it every single day, Think Factor. From the makers of Relief Factor, Think Factor is built to help you stay sharp, nurture your memory, boost your attention. It unlocks the mental clarity and precision you need to stay ahead of the game, no matter the challenge. After a couple of weeks of taking Think Factor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And look, the longer you take ThinkFactor, the better it works. This is not a one-off. You want to take ThinkFactor regularly. If you're a go-getter who refuses to settle, ThinkFactor can help you perform at your best and keep your edge. Call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF, or just visit ReliefFactor.com to order ThinkFactor. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Your first bottle is just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily with ThinkFactor.
Iran's supreme leader has addressed the ongoing protests in his country, insisting that rioters must be put in their place. His comments may signal a more aggressive approach by authorities. The protests, sparked by Iran's struggling economy, have been going on for a week. On Saturday, violence surrounding the demonstrations killed two more people, raising the death toll to at least 10. Public policy expert Matthew Continetti suggests that there are divisions within the Iranian regime.
With some political elements saying that they understand what the protesters are complaining about, that they want to even take action to mollify them. And that suggests that we could have a difference here between earlier widespread protests, like the Green Revolution, say, in 2009, where the government itself begins to fracture. That could lead to regime collapse.
Continetti has made his remarks to the Sailor Radio Network. Iran's government had signaled a willingness to negotiate, but economic challenges persist. Townhall.com, more on these stories. I'm Bernie Bennett. Charlotte, North Carolina, the FBI announced Friday that authorities disrupted a potential terrorist attack planning for New Year's Eve in North Carolina. At a news conference, Western District of North Carolina, U.S. Attorney Russ Ferguson describes how authorities knew about the suspect.
He started reading ISIS material, started going to ISIS websites, making TikTok videos, and eventually reached out to what he thought was a member of ISIS. In reality, was an undercover agent with NYPD in New York.
The Oxford Bus Company in the UK is taking inventory. The company has over 4,000 lost and found items collected in 2025.
Keys, mobile phones, umbrellas, purses, and wallets are among the most common items. But there are things like a bag of rubber ducks, a box of fortune cookies, an inflatable dinosaur costume, a jar of pickled onions, a bicycle tire, and a 22-pound bag of rice. The company says misplacing a personal item can be a stressful experience, and using technology, they return up to 23% of those items.
In 1 minute. The Brian Kilmeade Show will begin in 30 seconds. Enjoy. News headquarters in New York City. The most approachable radio host in America. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. Hi, everybody, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're back with a live show. We're so glad you're here. So much going on around the country, around the world. And, of course, wherever Donald Trump is, which right now is Florida. Nicole Parker coming up at the bottom of the hour, the best-selling author of the two FBIs, former FBI agent. I want to talk to her not just about Minnesota and the corruption there. I get it. It's so much worse than anyone thought, and I all saw the reporting and what went out in that 42-minute video and how it's gotten, millions of views right now and has changed the conversation in that liberal city. But I think it's bigger than that. And I'm going to talk to Nicole Parker about what they say is going on in Maine, Washington State, and especially California. And we'll talk to her at the bottom of the hour. Other surprise guests. But let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We will draw this city closer together. We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism.
Really? You want to turn my stomach? Say something like that. The socialists are in power in New York City. Mandami takes over. Bernie Sanders' mentee has gained power, and he's ebullient. I'm not. Are you?
Number two.
I have a great relationship with President Xi, and he hasn't told me anything about it. I certainly have seen it. I don't believe he's going to be doing it. Nothing worries me.
Well, I'm a little worried. Enemies line up. China harasses Taiwan and protests in Iran, now in its seventh day. And the President of the United States says to the Iranian government, hands off your people. How should we really respond?
Number one.
And I love President Trump's attitude about the economy, but people are concerned about it. And so rather than saying you're wrong, we have to say you're right. The affordability is an issue, and here are the things we're going to do about it.
And that's Marcus Lemonis weighing in, a true expert who owns Bath and Beyond, Bed Bath & Beyond, as well as the Campers World he founded. Ready to go in 26. The Trump team primes the economic pump for the new year. Tariff relief, tax refunds are going to be big. Health care needs to be addressed. What do you expect to get done and what not to get done? So I want to talk about first the economy, what the president's done. You might have missed it, and I think people are misinterpreting it. First off, when it comes to the ACA subsidies, put in place in 2021 during the pandemic, supposed to expire in 2025 to fuel Obamacare. Like it or not, Republicans have no blame on Obamacare, no credit, no blame. Now it's a mess. And guess what? They're saying, well, you should provide subsidies. Really? So it's like saying, I want to take out a loan to pay the overdraft to my checking account. That you're the one who put me into debt and overdrafted my checking account. Now you're mad that I'm not writing, signing off, co-signing a loan for your overdraft on your checking account. Republicans are guilty of one thing. They didn't come up with another alternative to Obamacare. Why? Because now about 51% of the people prior to this last crisis, they said they were for it. Okay? Republicans say, okay, we're just going to touch it. We tried to repeal it dozens of times. Didn't work. We're not going to touch it. Trump said, we're not going to do it. And then 4 years not in power, no one tried to reform it. They just threw more money at it. Now that money's expired by a law passed during Joe Biden's presidency, which I'm sure he doesn't remember any of it, now that the subsidies are gone, prices go up about 114% for about 4 million people. Significant. I'm not saying it's not significant. But you should know you're the one who is to blame for the health care program, the fact that none of this has worked out. Like President Obama said, he should be embarrassed. But now people are saying, I don't care whose fault it is. I can't afford my health care. Even though the health care you had a $6,000 deductible, that means you break a foot, you turn an ankle, you have an accident, anything minor, you're paying out of your pocket anyway. You have catastrophic insurance. So now a Senate bipartisan committee is coming together. Susan Collins, Bernie Moreno, Jeanne Shaheen convened a bipartisan group of about 9 senators by phone on Tuesday. They plan to meet again next week. I know Brian Fitzpatrick got together with Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey. They think this should be extended 1 year, at which time they got to come up in this next year with another plan that's going to be working. If you want to call it Obamacare, call it Obamacare. But the principles of it, whatever you thought, sincere or insincere, was it really a hope to have universal health care and this is a way to do it? Or did you really think there was going to be a bidding process within these states among health insurance companies and that would force prices down as people went shopping? You know what happened? People have nowhere to shop because all the health care companies are losing so much money, they didn't want to stay in it. And what Republicans have to wrestle with is a guy like Chip Roy, who I respect, who's very conservative from a conservative district. He says it's time for Republicans to aim for a major health care overhaul. Fine. Mike Lawler, in a battleground state, a district that Kamala Harris won, said he thinks that it's a political disaster not to continue the subsidies. He says people should not have flown out before New Year, before Christmas, without doing that, because he gets in trouble for it. Republicans could get blamed, but they did not do a good job explaining whose program that needs emergency funding. GDP is at 4.3%. It was supposed to be 3.2. Inflation was predicted to be 3.1%. It's 2.7. This is good news. But what Marcus Lemonis was saying is that don't tell people things are better than they are. That's what Joe Biden did. Cut one.
I love President Trump's attitude about the economy, but people are concerned about it. And so rather than saying you're wrong and the Democrats have done a nice job and we need to correct ourselves pretty quickly, we have to say you're right. the affordability is an issue. And here are the things we're going to do about it. And here are the things that you can do about it. So saying that, you know, it doesn't seem right is, I think, probably the thing that's causing Americans to be most frustrated.
So the other thing the president did said, all right, I hear you. You want cost of living down. So you're going to, for example, Scott Bessent came out and said you're going to get huge refunds on your taxes. You're going to have more in your paycheck. It's part of the big, beautiful bill that they put out there. Standard deduction increases for 26, single to married filing separately, $16,000 and up from $15,570. So you're going to be filing separately, so you're going to be making about another, have another $1,000. Married filing jointly, $32,200 is going to be your new refund, up from $31,500. So factors expected to affect the 26 economy, the Trump tax cuts, less certainty around tariffs, uncertainty around tariffs, ongoing AI boom, the interest rate reductions, which are expected as we get a new Fed, even if they don't come through, even if they don't come through in January. But what I want to bring back to is something that we found out this morning. The President of the United States, when it comes to tariffs, says, I'm going to give you some relief for about a year. They've had delayed planned tariff increases on upholstered furniture, kitchen cabinets, vanities, keeping rates at 25%. They're going to continue to negotiate with Mexico and continue to negotiate with Canada. And I think India, pretty sure. So we'll see where that goes. So these are things. It's not saying that tariffs aren't working. What he's trying to say is, look, I said I want tariffs to bring furniture making back, to bring clothing manufacturing back, to bring back steel, what we have the infrastructure for. Got it. Just need the contracts and maybe some expansion modernization. But he's saying it's not here yet. So as we effort, I'm going to tell you it's on the horizon. So there now makes financial sense to bring back the manufacturing here and skilled workers here and the training here. But in the meantime, I don't want you paying more. Here's what Robert Costa said on Face the Nation about the economy and the polling. This has got to concern people like James Blair, the deputy chief of staff. Cut six.
Democrats are looking at those numbers, and that's why they're making their whole argument to the country, affordability. They see real vulnerability for this administration on the economy. But inside the White House, I would say the phrase is not affordability, it's self-confidence. This president behind the scenes is telling his advisors to stay steady, to not have alarm. There is frustration about press coverage. There's frustration about how Republicans in Congress seem to be so worried ahead of the midterm, some heading for the exits with retirements. The president, again and again in private conversations with his top officials, is insistent that the trade policy is working.
So the president also is making other moves. The president adjusted imports of timber, lumber, and their derivative products. He said, quote, the United States continues to engage in productive negotiations with trade partners. The United States will therefore delay the increase in tariff rates for upholstered furniture and things to that nature. I think we should do the USMCA. Just updated. It's supposed to be updated. Evidently, people who are experts in this field said the USMCA was working good, needs to be modernized, changed, to fiddled with. It was supposed to evaporate in 5 years. This is the fifth year. So that would bring certainty. And then India is the other one. India, unlike China, China can't get any of their people to buy anything. So they have to export and make their money. In India, they are buying local. They are staying with India products. Modi's done an effective job, if I'm to believe the numbers, in getting Indian, the Indian population to buy India products and kind of rally against America and this trade deal. So to me, it's a relationship that has good foundation, bit of a fracture. I'd love for the president directly get involved, and they start doing that, the market's going to respond effectively. That's what I think. Here's more from Alex Sawyer on the Sunday briefing. He's with the Washington Times editor-at-large. Cut five.
I'm maybe a negative Nancy for Republicans. I think it's been the past, 20 out of the 22 midterm elections, the party in charge has lost ground. So what can they do to help that kind of narrative, the affordability? They need to be specific. They really should do something with health care. That's been some pressure. And people within the own party are like, what have we done with 38 bills? We should have addressed health care. Housing is a big issue. I think they need to get specific. We talk about tariffs. Yeah. I think President Trump's idea of tariff checks might help boost their chances in the midterm. I'm not sure what it would do long term for the economy, but it might help them politically.
I did think, I've talked to two people in the military over the weekend, and they said, the 1776 really helpful because, you know, they're not making a ton of money, but some stuff is paid for, including the great health care. But if you'd give someone an extra $1,776 in their paycheck in January, coming off what likely could be credit card bills, that's a huge thumbs up from the military. So when we come back, I'll take your calls for the first time, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show, bottom of the hour. We go inside the scandal in Minneapolis. It's going to spread to Maine, Washington State, and California when it comes to these social programs. And when we come back, with the Washington Post put in their editorial section, not Mark Thiessen's editorial, a conservative, but the Washington Post editorial board. You'll be surprised. I was.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Ed Evans, CEO of Consumer Cellular. Maybe you haven't heard about us. We're not one of the big guys. Truth is, we don't want to be. If you're over 50, Big Wireless has you paying for more data than you might need. Why? They might want you to cover the cost of younger people who do use all that data. If you're not using the data, you're probably being used. We've heard time and time again that some Big Wireless customers get stuck paying hundreds and even thousands more for years and years because they think it's hard to switch. Not with us. It takes just about 20 minutes, and you can change your plan anytime without extra charges. We use the same towers as the big guys, so you'll get the same fast nationwide coverage without the big wireless bill.
Our plans start at just $20 a month, and for a limited time, switch and get your second month free. Call 1-888-FREEDOM, visit ConsumerCellular.com, or a store near you and get your second month free today. Plans include $5 credit for auto pay and e-billing. See site for additional details.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Billy, your gas light's on. We need to stop and fill up.
No way, Jen. Gas around here is too expensive. We can make it a little further.
Billy, listen to your big sister. You don't need to drive all over searching for the lowest gas prices. Do what I do and use Upside.
Upside?
Do you live under a rock, Billy? Upside is the hottest cashback app out there. It's free to download, and you get real cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I use it all the time, and I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying the gas you have to buy anyway?
Yes, I'm looking at the Upside app now, and you can get up to a $5 cashback bonus on your first tank.
Okay, I'm stopping to download Upside and fill up my tank.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime, right to your bank, to PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. That's code RAIN5 for up to a $5 cash back bonus.
I'm Gianna Delosi with your Fox True Crime Minute. A man in Italy accused of dressing up as his mom to collect her pension. The man, whose name hasn't been released by authorities, is the son of Graziella Dall'Olio, who had died in 2022 at the age of 82. Police say the 57-year-old man, who's a former nurse and currently unemployed, did not report her death to authorities. When Dall'Olio's ID expired, the son allegedly put on makeup, a wig, and her clothes to pose as his mother and renew her ID. However, the agent that was processing the application noticed dark hair on the back of his neck and on his chin and tipped off authorities to the alleged crime. Officers then went to the elderly woman's home address and found her mummified body in the laundry closet room wrapped in sleeping bags. The man is accused of concealing a corpse, fraud against the state, impersonation, and forgery of a public document. He's accused of removing fluids from his mother's body with a syringe to prevent decomposition. There's more on this story at foxnews.com or subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast. I'm Gianna Delosi with your Fox True Crime Minute.
I'm Ashley DeVorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile with the cast of Peacock's new mystery whodunit series, All Her Fault, starring Sarah Snook as a mother searching for her missing son as mysterious circumstances unfold. Jake Lacy and Jay Ellis discussed how it's a series where intrigue starts right away.
You dive right in and then are sort of left going like, it could be any of these people or someone else.
I immediately wanted to jump to like to page 48 or whatever it is of that pilot, that first episode, to figure out, like, well, where do we go from here?
Abby Elliott and Daniel Monks have tips for those ready to guess along.
There's so many subtle moments
throughout, you know, the first few episodes. You know, if you blink, you might miss it.
Watch with friends or with people, family members, partners. It's very similar to like watching The Traitors. Is like, is arguing and debating over who you think what or how.
Ashley Dvorkin, Fox News.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
1961, television, thought to be pandering to the lowest common denominator for the sake of ad revenue, was coming under increased attack from all sides, most notably FCC Chairman Newton Minow in May of 1961.
When television is good, nothing, not the theater, not the magazines or newspapers, nothing is better. But when television is bad, nothing is worse. I invite each of you to sit down in front of your own set when your station goes on the air and stay there for a day without a book, without a magazine, without a newspaper, without a profit and loss sheet or a rating book to distract you. Keep your eyes glued to that set until the station signs off. I can assure you that what you will observe is a vast wasteland.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk. Think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Taiwan issue is interesting because, yes, I mean, the president said some nice things about Chairman Xi there, but what has he done recently? He sold a massive arms package to Taiwan. Now, nobody thinks Taiwan's going to invade China. It's the reverse. So these are all defensive weapons. This is no threat to China, but they're reacting hysterically to it with these live-fire drills. So I think the president knows exactly what he's doing there.
So what I love, so the President of the United States got this tactic, and I hope people are beginning to get it. So when he was in Russia, you're too tight with Vladimir Putin. The President's too tight with Vladimir Putin. But if you look at the President's actions, he is aggressive, defensive, aware, cautious. When his first term, if you think about everything that he did, remember what he got out of missile treaty that the Russians were trading on. Number two, he upped the sanctions on Russia since this whole war started. It was Barack Obama who pulled the missile shield coming into office out in 2009. And it was Barack Obama who did nothing with Georgia. What this president did, he walked into office the first term and said, what's going on here? You know, Ukraine, this whole fighting's continuing in the Donbass region. And Crimea, you know, basically has just been given away, even though Obama said you're going to have to eventually give it up. He never did anything about it. So he gave him javelins. And then he put USP guys on the ground and NATO people on the ground to train the Ukrainian army in Western ways. So when the invasion happened years later, when he wasn't in office, they had a foundation there. And it was Joe Biden who said, they're going to lose in 48 hours. Do you want to ride out? He goes, I don't want to ride. I want weapons, as Zelensky famously said back. Well, the president is putting the hammer down on Russia in our hemisphere. He's putting the hammer down on Russia by giving those HIMARS and ATACMS, continue with the HIMARS and ATACMS, as well as the Patriots, gave them all to Ukraine. Now they're paying for through NATO, understood, working out deals when it comes to rare earth, working out deals when it comes to drones with Ukraine, forcing NATO to bulk up. Well, he talks down NATO. No. He's got a method. What he says is, guys, I'm not going to watch your back anymore. You're going to learn to protect yourselves. Wow, he's leaving NATO. No. He's trying to get Germany to actually understand that we trust you enough to build up your military. So instead of 1.4% GDP, they are now saying we can't count on America anymore. And Chancellor Merz is now training his people. And you know who did this? Watch 60 Minutes. They don't credit Trump, of course. But what he did with China is so emblematic of the president's ways. He doesn't say he came in hard with China and said, here's, you know, fentanyl's coming in and here are the tariffs and we're going to up tariffs on you and you're going to go back and forth. Then they walk it back and now they're in trade negotiations. Now, while he continues to praise President Xi and accept his invitation to go over there, he sent $11 billion, more than anybody else, worth of equipment and deals are heading over to Taiwan. now with Japan. He's friends with the really respectful of the new conservative leader of Japan, who said, Japan came out and they were critical of China. And they said, what are you doing around Taiwan? We're really concerned about what you're doing in the Taiwan Strait. China says, how dare you speak out like that? And they start sending and doing some military exercises and trying to send some brushback pitches to Japan. And Japan kept up the rhetoric. So China calls up the U.S. and says, can you rein in your ally? But at the same time, we make some statements. Let's be cooler heads prevail here. At the same time, we send B-2 bombers through and across the whole Japanese coast. Don't have to trumpet and say, hey, China, this is in your face, because they got this pride issue and this inferiority complex that they've had since the Opium Wars, and maybe since the West even went over there and took advantage of Chinese society, whatever. But the president doesn't go out there. Yeah, with Greenland, he has a different approach. When it comes to Iran, a different approach. When it comes to the big powers, go ahead and show through demonstration the toughness. But through the rhetoric, he doesn't go aggressive. I absolutely love it. Now, we have to be prepared tactically in order to fend off Taiwan being invaded. Now, you might be thinking, what do we care? You know, Taiwan, historically, there is no link between the island of Formosa and China. No link. It was Chiang Kai-shek who was in power right after World War II who lost power and fled to what was Formosa. Now they've nicknamed Taiwan. But that's it. Yeah, those people that now are in charge used to be in China, but the land itself was never China. So we have to be ready to defend that island. And if you don't think it is important, understand too that they are our number one and one of the world's number one supplier of chips that run everything from our military to our iPhones to our satellites. We can't let that go and let China control 99% of it. It's not in our national interest. Number two, a democracy in that area, an island of stability, if they were able to use that as a launching site and a staging area, we might as well give up in the entire Pacific. It's within our interests. Now, you wouldn't think that, you listen to a lot of the podcasters, but it's in our interest. We can't just worry about Fortress America. It's not the George Washington era anymore. And most of the people that we were worried about are now our allies. We're going to unwind some of the corruption in Minneapolis and more with Nicole Parker next.
The world.
Trey Yingst joining us from Tel Aviv, Israel.
To Washington.
I'm Mike Emanuel.
To your own backyard. If the story impacts you or your wallet, we're on it. It's the Fox News Rundown. We give every story the deeper look it deserves with must-listen interviews and smart analysis from the voices you can trust. Start your day with the Fox News Rundown. Listen and follow now at foxnewsrundown.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey, this is Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Every Tuesday, you'll hear what's on my mind. Plus, every Thursday, there's a special bonus episode where we answer the questions that are on your mind. Make sure to spend your Tuesdays and Thursdays with Trey. Subscribe now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Hope to see you.
America's listening to Fox News.
I'm Emily Campagno, and I'm taking you inside the Idaho murders. In Moscow, Idaho, a small college town, one case so violent and heartbreaking shocked the nation. Four students were found brutally murdered in their off-campus home, prompting a cross-country search for the cold-blooded killer. The Fox True Crime Podcast presents Inside the Idaho Murders, the evidence, the manhunt, the killer, and the victims.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. Every weekday, it's your go-to source for staying informed and entertained. The Fox News Primetime Highlights Podcast, offering a curated selection of the most impactful moments of the Ingram Angle, Jesse Waters Primetime, Hannity, and Gutfeld. Listen and follow now so you never miss a moment of the action-packed highlights from these must-watch Fox News Channel shows. Go to foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. America's listening to Fox News.
I'm Emily Campagno, and I'm taking you inside the Idaho murders. In Moscow, Idaho, a small college town, one case so violent and heartbreaking shocked the nation. Four students were found brutally murdered in their off-campus home, prompting a cross-country search for the cold-blooded killer. The Fox True Crime Podcast presents Inside the Idaho Murders, the evidence, the manhunt, the killer, and the victims.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. Every weekday, it's your go-to source for staying informed and entertained. The Fox News Primetime Highlights Podcast, offering a curated selection of the most impactful moments of the Ingram Angle, Jesse Waters Primetime, Hannity, and Gutfeld. Listen and follow now so you never miss a moment of the action-packed highlights from these must-watch Fox News Channel shows. Go to foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. America's listening to Fox News.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1971. Charles Manson.
It came about by not having a family, by being born without a father. I'm on the wrong side of the law the minute I was born, and I stand strong inside of it.
The district attorney's office and I personally and the Los Angeles Police Department are all exceedingly happy with this verdict. We expected the verdict, but until that clerk reads the verdict, you never know.
I think the public's reaction has been, we did need to know this information. We had a right to know it.
Jim was buried in a simple ceremony with only a few friends present because those of us who knew him intimately wanted to avoid all the notoriety and circus-like atmosphere that surrounded the deaths of such other rock personalities.
I'd just like to say before we start off with the concert that to thank you all for coming here.
Peace out! Peace out! Peace!
News as it happens. News as it happens.
This is Fox News Talk.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. Even though December is the month you might be spending more dough than usual for holiday gifts, the month also provides some great deals that include end-of-year sales at big-box retailers that feature price cuts on major appliances, both big and small. And if you're looking for some beauty and fragrance items, many retailers sell discounted sets of makeup, perfume, hair, and skincare products. You can buy gifts for others and at the same time stock up on your favorite beauty and fragrance brands at discount prices. And if you want to treat yourself to a dinner out while doing your holiday shopping or need to pick up a last-minute gift, many restaurants and retailers offer deals on gift cards in December. After Christmas, you can find significant discounts on holiday-specific items and remaining seasonal inventory. While shopping, don't overlook opportunities to stack deals by combining store coupons, cashback offers, and clearance pricing to score some great savings. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
News, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A lot of the journalism that's been going on the last couple of days has been really dishonest. I don't want to point fingers at anybody, but I do feel like what was done was someone came to our building outside of operating hours. When there's a specific sign on our door that says our days and our hours, he came outside of those hours and then claimed, hey, they're closed and they're still making money. They're using taxpayer money to work. And it's like, you don't come outside of operational hours and then say they're using taxpayer money. That was completely false.
Yeah, it's not completely false. Nice try. They also staged a break-in, in my view, my word. They staged a break-in when they had to turn over records on the daycare, who came in, who came out, how long, who's getting paid. Suddenly there was a break-in the night before, and they showed a door being broken down and all the records stolen. Does anyone believe that? A person that got trained to be skeptical, former FBI agent, the author of The Two FBIs, Nicole Parker, Fox News contributor Nicole Parker, joins us now. Nicole, as you watched Nick Shirley put out his 42-minute tape of going through these daycare and healthcare centers, 42-minute tape showing what you saw, and then you see the denials, the walkbacks, and the blaming Trump. As an investigator, what are your thoughts?
Deflection doesn't work. It just does not work. The truth shall always make you free. And you know what? The truth can also make you not free and put you into prison. And let's just see what happens. Let's let Nick Shirley, who opened up Pandora's box for these individuals, and drew attention to it, rightfully so. He has every right to do that. And let's put this into the hands of the investigators, the FBI, HSI, and trained investigators who have the legal power to do subpoenas, search warrants, gather records, let them do full investigations with DOJ, and let's see where the chips fall. Because we all know that you're innocent until you're proven guilty in the court of law. But it's amazing to me, Brian, how this is Trump's fault. How this is Trump's long game, according to Governor Tim Walz. This is what he always had planned. You know, Tim, it's actually not Trump's fault that your state is being accused of bilking up to $1 billion. And again, I think it's important for Americans to realize that when the FBI or a law enforcement agency gets a case, do you know how it typically starts? Well, the way that it's supposed to start, not under the last administration, those were all, you know, predominantly political investigations, frankly. But typically how it works is that there's a tip line and that normal American citizens or individuals in society can see something and say something, and they contact the FBI or someone in law enforcement, someone at DOJ. They get the information, they provide it to law enforcement, and then they run through, law enforcement takes over, and they do a full force investigation. And that's exactly what happened here. Someone obviously spoke to Nick, and he's been working with his cohort, David, amazing individuals. Someone saw something that didn't seem right. They reported it to someone, and that's how we got to this point. And that's exactly how investigations begin. So for them to think, why are they picking on us? You know, why are they picking on the Somali community? How did this even happen? Why are we being targeted? They think they're never going to get caught. And that's how fraudsters live and operate. They take the chance that they will never, ever get caught because, frankly, there's a lot of fraud going on in our nation right now, and many times people don't get caught. But you know what? When you have nothing to hide, Brian, I would say come on in. Go and do a full investigation, and I will be free because the truth will make me free. But when you know that you're doing the wrong thing, that you are bilking money, that you are stealing from the taxpayers, then people start to panic. And all of a sudden there's a break-in, and they stole important documents, allegedly. So let's just let the investigation work itself out. But this is not going away. And frankly, this is just the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion.
So you're right, too. And the thing is, it's so much bigger than Minneapolis, because we even have the editorial section of the Washington Post calling on Donald Trump, saying this: there's waste when it comes to food stamps and the SNAP program. Quote, as American welfare system has ballooned to more than 80 major federal programs, they've become a target-rich environment for alleged scam artists like those in Minneapolis. Walz's boondoggle underlines the need for serious reforms across America. Too bad that too many progressive leaders are lackadaisical at best about cracking down on fraud and errors, lest it curtail social services. I expect that from the Washington Free Beacon or from Fox News, but I didn't expect it from the Washington Post. Might it show that the wind might be at the back of investigators?
Right, and I commend that because, again, I don't care what your news network is. You should be speaking the truth, and you should be addressing real issues. And I do agree with you that this is just the tip of the iceberg. And just looking at the child care systems in Minnesota, this is just the beginning. Looking at it from the state level, this is just the beginning. I can tell you that I knew agents that were working out of the Columbus office for the FBI, and they were seeing Somali fraud in Columbus, Ohio. And the same issue is going on in Washington, and it's going on probably in every state. And it's not just child care issues. I worked in FBI Miami. We were number one in the country, sadly, for health care fraud. We had three squads that were dedicated just to working health care fraud in FBI Miami. And securities fraud, number one in the country in Miami. I mean, the fraud is everywhere. But, Brian, this is why it's so important for the FBI to get back to doing real work and real investigations. Because if you think about it, for the last 4 years, the number one priority, and they are very proud to state it, DOJ under Merrick Garland was proud to say that the number one effort and the largest investigation in DOJ history was January 6th. And so when you're going after political opponents and focus on going after conservatives and things of that sort, rather than focusing on real crimes, that's right. How this happens. And when you're hiring the wrong types of agents who are not interested in working these complex financial crimes, I'll tell you right now, people are complaining and saying, you know, where is Pam Bondi? What is she doing? Why aren't these people in handcuffs? I think it's important to note that they have already arrested 92 individuals. in Minnesota. 80 of them are Somalis. But Pam Bondi and Kash Patel, they walked into an absolute firestorm. Okay, they've only been in office for less than a year. These investigations take time, and it takes patience. And having work complex white-collar crime investigations, you've got to subpoena records. You've got to schedule them. You have forensic accountants. It is a long, laborious process to get it done right. But I'm so grateful that attention is being drawn to this. And it puts everyone on alert across the country. If you're doing fraud, you better watch out, because this administration, they're going to be all over it.
So people want to say it's racism because you're targeting the Somali community. Excuse me. They also have a Somali community that is under scrutiny right now in Maine, in Washington State, and in California. It's not all. But you write that Columbus, Ohio is the number two office for fraud in the country. And this fraud is also very heavy in Washington State, as I mentioned. So this investigation's got to be widespread. I got it. But here's what worries me as a non-investigator. Speed. We already saw, well, we have no records. We were broken into last night. You came in the wrong hours. We have kids there from 12 to 6. Are you worried about, because we're not moving at the speed that Nick Shirley was moving at when he kind of surprised them, that there's going to be a lot of covering of tracks?
Well, let me tell you first, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than it has been going on behind the scenes. It's just that the FBI and DOJ don't talk about their investigations openly when they're ongoing. They're working thousands of investigations behind the scenes. Yes, of course, speed is always important, and that's why you always want to obtain evidence as quickly as possible to avoid, you know, destruction of evidence. But at the same time, I am not worried about that, because these individuals, you cannot hide when you've been stealing that much money. The bank records do not lie. And that's one thing that I always learned. Follow the money. The bank records do not lie. You can run, but you cannot hide. And the truth will come out. I think the most important part is that they're focusing efforts on this. And I know that Kash Patel has been sending tons of resources right now to Minnesota, but this is going to have to happen nationwide. This Somali network, Brian, it's a network nationwide. These individuals, it's a tight-knit community. They're not just, you know, compartmentalized in different states. There's a full network, I'm sure, going on behind the scenes across different states. I'm sure a lot of these people know each other. They probably talk to each other. How did you do it for your state? Okay, well, this is what's worked for us, and we haven't been caught. But, again, tips matter. And when you see something, say something, because that's how all of this likely began. And good for Nick Shirley to be an independent journalist and to draw this much attention to it. Look, we'll take all the help we can get. The FBI and DOJ, HSI, they'll take as much help as they can get from really honest Americans who want to do the right thing.
Congressman Mike Harpootlolos is in Florida, and he said this is how he thinks we should handle it. Cut 31.
Well, as a son of an FBI agent, this is nothing short of organized crime. This is what the mafia does. They steal, they lie, they cheat. And what's happened here is nothing short of that. And the federal government has to use the full powers that we used to destroy the mafia back in the 1960s. Nothing short of it. This undercuts the fabric of America. People work hard to pay their taxes, and they see the dollars thrown away in an organized crime method.
Is it like the mob?
That's exactly what I was just trying to explain. I believe it's very highly organized, very orchestrated behind the scenes, and I do believe that it's a form of the mob. I mean, and again, it's not just Somalis that are doing this. You're going to see that there's other, you know, groups and ethnicities that come from different places, and they formulate these networks, and that's how they're going to approach this. And it will be approached very aggressively, but again, it's so important that you have the FBI agents who have the intellect and the background to work these complex crimes. Because a lot of people, and even prosecutors, you know, they go for the low-hanging fruit. That's why they did the January 6th misdemeanors, because you know how easy it was to get a statistical accomplishment for a January 6th misdemeanor? You could do that overnight. That's not a real investigation. These actually require a lot of background work, and so it takes time. But I agree with that assessment that he just stated. I do believe it is organized crime. It's happening, and it's, again, not just child health care. It's not just in Minnesota. It's across the nation. But I'm just, I appreciate what is going on right now, because these individuals thought that they would never get caught. And they roll the dice when they do this. Think of how many years this has been going on.
But I want to see if it goes back to lawmakers. I want to see if it goes back to Ilhan Omar. I mean, she's at the restaurant where all those thousands of meals were charged, where they only have 30 tables in this restaurant, and they evidently charge for 18,000 meals. She's having her fundraisers there. I'm wondering how much direct link she could have. You say that Nick Shirley, as much as you salute what he did, he says that that's not going to hold up in court. That's not the type of thing that holds up in court.
Yeah.
In what respect? Can you break that down for us?
Because you actually have to have hardcore evidence. You can't just have, you know, oh, I went in with an iPhone and I took some video. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, and that can be used to corroborate facts, but you've got to have facts that are legally obtained that can be stand up in the court of law. So, for instance, bank records that are through a federal grand jury subpoena. That's the type of thing that's going to stand up in the court of law. You have to have evidence that's permissible in court. And again, there are always witnesses. You can have witnesses across the board from all the different various backgrounds. I think Nick Shirley absolutely, you know, could come in and be brought in as a potential witness to be interviewed and utilize his information. And what his videos do is they actually provide where the FBI, okay, you know what, you discovered this. Now let the FBI go in and we're going to do the actual investigation legally and gather all the legal evidence that we have to have, but they'll take all the tips that they can get. And right. What he's done is absolutely phenomenal, but it is a huge task, and it is daunting, because think about it. The FBI has only about 13,000 agents worldwide. Okay. And if you look at all of the fraud that's happening, it's pretty rampant across the country. Frankly, sometimes I would see things and I was surprised at how well our country did function. Knowing what you know, sometimes it's better to not know what you know. But going back to Ilhan Omar, they'll look into that. They're going to be looking at it from a complex white-collar crime perspective as well as a public corruption. Those are in public office, abusing right. their power, doing the wrong thing. Those investigations take time.
Yeah, and lastly, you just say that the last few classes of FBI agents, you say they are lazy and not that bright.
I mean, there's always good individuals everywhere, and there were some really amazing new agents that I worked with at the FBI. But I'll tell you, overall, the seasoned FBI agents were a bit concerned because of the lowering of the standards that appeared to be taking place across the board, and that's detrimental to the success of the agency. And when you get agents in there who are not hired for the proper reasons, are hired to fill quotas, are not hired based on their credentials, and then you ask them, hey, can you work this complex white-collar crime on this investigation in Minnesota? And they kind of look at you dumbfounded. That's a problem. And so the FBI historically had been known to hire individuals who are attorneys, military, law enforcement background, accountants, you know, financial background. And it kind of shifted quite drastically, Brian. I was very shocked to see that they were interviewing people that had literally worked at Costco. And I have no problem with people that work at Costco. I think that's phenomenal, yeah. And I honor hard work ethic. But the FBI had historically been hiring people that this was their second career. Okay. They had already done something phenomenal, and this was their second career. It shifted drastically. They were hiring almost students who were almost straight out of college, who had no substantial work experience, and they were shifting what their priority was. Rather than a diversity of work backgrounds, it was more a diversity of ethnicities, races, and genders. And frankly, I don't think that's what's going to solve these investigations. You need agents that work hard. You know, there were some agents that would come in and they would whine and cry, oh, I want the new bureau car. Why do I get this old bureau car? Oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to work overtime. Excuse me, when you're a new agent, you pay your dues. Like, that's what you do. Like, you get in there, what can I do? I'm here to help. I'll help with anything that I need to do. You're pretty much working 24/7 as a new agent. And as a violent crime agent, that's the pace I was going my entire career. And so that should be the expectation of the FBI. No more of this, oh, you know, you check a box to fill a quota. That's unacceptable. And so I appreciate that Kash Patel is working feverishly to get the FBI back on track, raising those hiring standards. So that you have agents right. that are capable of working these cases is so gotcha. Important.
Nicole, thanks so much. Nicole Parker, pick up her book, The Two FBIs. Thanks, Nicole.
My pleasure. God bless y'all. Have a great weekend.
You got it. Nicole's going to be joining me Sunday night on One Nation, 10 p.m. We're going to be live. Don't move.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin. Billy, your gas light's on. We need to stop and fill up.
No way, Jen. Gas around here is too expensive. We can make it a little further.
Billy, listen to your big sister. You don't need to drive all over searching for the lowest gas prices. Do what I do and use Upside.
Upside?
Do you live under a rock, Billy? Upside is the hottest cash back app out there. It's free to download, and you get real cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I use it all the time, and I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying the gas you have to buy anyway?
Yes, I'm looking at the Upside app now, and you can get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank.
Okay, I'm stopping to download Upside and fill up my tank. Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime, right to your bank, to PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code RAIN5 to get up to a $5 cash back bonus on your first tank. That's code RAIN5 for up to a $5 cash back bonus.
My name is Whitney Allen. I am a widow. My husband, Ryan, died. We never thought in a million years we'd have to use life insurance. The unexpected happened. With Ethos, it is so fast and easy. It's 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage through Ethos.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term.
Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
I'm Ed Evans, CEO of Consumer Cellular. No, we're not one of the big guys. Truth is, we don't want to be. If you're over 50, Big Wireless probably has you paying for more data than you might need. You could be throwing away thousands over a lifetime.
Our entry-level data plans start at just $20 a month. And for a limited time, switch and get your second month free. Call 1-888-FREEDOM, visit ConsumerCellular.com, or a store near you and get your second month free today. Plans include $5 credit for auto pay and e-billing. See site for additional details.
You never know who might be taking the quiz.
Hi, everyone. It's Candace Cameron Bure.
Hey, everyone. It's Phil Sims.
It's Dolores Catania.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kix Brooks.
It's Candace Bushnell.
I'm Rob Paulson.
I'm Ryan Serhant.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nicole Palizzi.
Hey, everybody. It's Kevin Nealon.
What's up, guys? It's Nia Sue, and it's time to take the quiz.
Five questions in less than 5 minutes every day. Listen and follow at thequiz.fox.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
You never know who might be taking the quiz.
Hi, everyone. It's Candace Cameron Bure.
Hey, everyone. It's Phil Sims.
It's Dolores Catania.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kix Brooks.
It's Candace Bushnell.
I'm Rob Paulson.
I'm Ryan Serhant.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nicole Palizzi.
Hey, everybody. It's Kevin Nealon.
What's up, guys? It's Nia Sue, and it's time to take the quiz.
Five questions in less than 5 minutes every day. Listen and follow at thequiz.fox.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I went to a lot of effort to get the cleanest copy of the laptop data, the same data that was provided to the FBI, because I didn't want to have any professional journalistic risk for CBS News. I wanted this thing to be totally locked down. When we did the story, we did it after the midterms. I argued against that because it was ready before the midterms. And my training is that you should always do the story when it's ready to go. You should not be dictated by the political cycle. Once we got the laptop story on the morning news, I felt that there was so much there that we could still do. For example, in the text messages, there's unfortunately the use of the N-word, the liberal use of the N-word. And I thought this was worthy of a story, but I was told that it was not something that interested CBS News.
Yeah, I wonder why. That was Catherine Herridge, formerly of Fox, one at CBS, and they basically were spiking all her stories, including the Hunter Biden laptop. And that's really why I think it's great that you have a total change in CBS. And it's unbelievable the arrogance of the people that work there at 60 Minutes, Scott Pelley and company, saying, how dare you not air a story, or how dare you come in with your new philosophy, or Connie Chung coming out and saying you've ruined CBS. Really, she's been there for about a couple of weeks, taking over, trying to infringe some balance into CBS. And you have all hell breaking loose. Catherine Herridge now on the outside, now reporting for X, telling the truth about how they spiked the story. So don't tell me they're not by a flagrant bias there. We'll see if anything changes. Tony DiCoppo, who I think works the same time as I do in the morning, now gets the evening show.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could it be lower testosterone?
Lower T.
Happens to most guys after 40.
I was in the same boat until I started using Nugenix Total T2. Total T2, the new one I've seen on TV.
Yep, it's the next generation testosterone booster for both free and total testosterone. It's packed with even more man-boosting power, sending nitric oxide levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours.
It actually works?
I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I've got more energy, better results in the gym, and things are even better in the bedroom. Send them a text and get a complimentary bottle.
Text now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one testosterone brand at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, absolutely free. Text SAVVY to 369-369. That's SAVVY to 369-369. SAVVY to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1983. President Ronald Reagan.
How they preach the supremacy of the state, declare its omnipotence over individual man, and predict its eventual domination of all peoples on the earth. They are the focus of evil in the modern world.
To ignore the great majority of the American public who enjoys rock music is just pure stupidity.
We had a good supply, and the sunshield's closing now. We'll be with you in a minute.
That's great, Sally.
Our immediate challenge to this atrocity is to ensure that we make the skies safer and that we seek just compensation for the families of those who were killed.
Never again should a black or Hispanic or woman or Jew, because of race, religion, or sex, be limited or inhibited as we grow. The aristocracy is not the limit. The sky is the limit. Our time has come.
News as it happens then. News as it happens now.
This is Fox News Talk.